Good morning, gents, ladies, members, officials. What's your name, daughter?
Leandra.
Leandra is our guest of honor today. She is a daughter to, you know, I never get used to this honorable thing. You know, Prince Buthelezi, you know, when he addresses members of parliament, if you listen to him very carefully, you know, horrible members, horrible members. I horrible you. We have a very interesting item on our agenda today. I want to submit is long overdue that we're supposed to have had it even before, you know, there was a change. In some of our party's representation in the committee with Dr. Lurie Osman. How can I forget? Old friend of mine. We've always been hammering on a need to get a briefing on this very important subject matter that is before us. it really gets to be the backbone I would want to submit. And of course, the officials who attest otherwise, you know, on the subject matter. It is a matter that really can make or break, you know, our sector, which we are about. And overall, it is a matter that can also talk to food security. Making it or breaking it, and generally trade. So we might have to take a process that does not only end now with regards to the subject that we are about. Moreover, that trading industry did not see it fit that they be part of this briefing. We might have to go back to them and call them on any other subject matter that we feel and deem it necessary. We only have one apology that we received in writing from the minister. For our committee meeting today. About?
The minister is apologizing for not being here. Will we hear?
Okay, can we stop being cynical? Can we just take matters and then move with them? If we want to engage in a discussion, let us do so. Without passing any remarks that are cynical. We are free to engage in a discussion, if we so wish. We only have that one apology, as I said. And then also, we only have one item for the agenda. Perhaps before we do that, there are two other important areas that I thought we might just wish to throw them for members to begin talking about them in their own minds, and perhaps in preparation for our own session. The secretary is adding another one, which is the third one. The first one relates to the legislation that Department of Rural Development, or rather Committee of Rural Development and Land Reform, is having. They have requested an input from our committee. We haven't had time to do so. I'm not sure about the timing of their legislation processes, but as I said, it is expected of us that we make an input on that. We have a copy here of the legal opinion. I'm not too sure if Dinawa has been off sick. She has had temporary standbys. We're really not assisting much, save for minutes that just ended there. Any other correspondence that would have been coming by, it has really not been coming through any of them. This is one area. We might have to see how best we deal with that one. The other area of interest for us that also warranted us as of the 31st of August to input on relates to the National Agricultural Marketing Council. There are two vacancies there. Now, also I want to believe copies have since been distributed to members. The letter written from the speaker, in fact, by the minister to the speaker to our committee. Again, what we did do was to seek for an extension to the speaker and also to the minister, because the 31st of August was just not feasible for us to make an input on. What I also asked us to do was to receive a copy of the Act itself, National Agricultural Marketing Council, so that we are clear of our role. Very briefly, our role is simply that of being a post box, if you like. We receive the CVs, we pass them over. We are not involved in any processes. DG, we have made a request. I think it was on land bank filling of those vacancies that was some few months ago, that whatever transpires out of that process, we be kept in the loop. We did not, it was actually last year beginning. We received another request beginning of the year, asked that we fill the vacancies, which we did not feel because we were still awaiting a response from the ministry or from the department of what transpired out of those exercises that were engaged in the previous year. If you like, it was more of a form of a protest on our part, because we couldn't proceed, doing another exercise whilst we're still awaiting a feedback. What we did to members for our own recollection was that we, much as the legislation does not allow us to engage in any form of either interviews or selection or any such, but just the courtesy that we be allowed to make some input in the process. Granted, the legislation does not allow us to do that, but as that we did ask. And then, of course, also what we also did ask our legal people here in Parliament was to give us some space within which we can review all those pieces of legislation, especially that relates to the entities and our role as Parliament that we would have to play in the governance of those entities. Not only in terms of, you know, selecting or interviewing or any of such, but also the actual governance itself of those entities. It leaves a lot to be desired. We had asked that, you know, that we ask the legal team here in Parliament to assist us in that regard, identify all the loopholes, and some of those pieces of legislation, they date back, you know, like 70s, 80s, you name them, and others 90s, just before, you know, 1994. If we can get that feedback in our next meeting, I think that would take us forward about progress in that regard. The last one, it is an invitation by a committee of parliament from Mozambique. They are visiting our country. They would have loved to have some bit of time with us. Can't remember the dates. They are here. Something to that effect. As I said, my eyes are giving me trouble here. I think those are the only three members that I thought I might wish to, just before we start our session. Mr. Van Dalen?
Yes, I wonder if I can add to that, and that would be an oversight visit to the Navy to go and see those patrol boats and see what is wrong, why they haven't moved yet, and maybe get an update on what's going on with them. We do have an oversight role over it, so I think it would be good to go and exercise our oversight role to go and see what is the problem with those ships and maybe get some solutions to the problem. They've been nearly there 6 months now and they haven't moved yet out of the harbour, out of Simonstown.
Are we fine with that, members?
Most definitely.
Okay. The last one that I thought I might wish to get our members just on board about relates to the study tour. As we indicated last time, the plan was to leave coming weekend. We have failed to get Chile on board. September is their festive period. October they have local government election, and that left us only with Brazil. The response from the House Chair says we have been, and there's been a lot of activity in Brazil. As a result, we are now back on square one. That's where we are with regards to the study tour. In other words, with everybody having been to Brazil, the story goes as follows. The Brazilians are no more keen in receiving any of our committees because there's been a lot of, you know, of our committees going there. the situation with regards to the study floor. Comments? We still must hear from what the speaker has to say. But that's what the opinion of the house chair. Telling it like it is. No comments so far. We're still working on Osama.
Thank you. It's not a comment. I'm just worried because now we are in September. If we are to start from the scratch, it really, there is no hope for us to go anywhere. Especially this year. If we fail this month, I don't think anything will come in. Chairperson, we are left only 2 years to come. And since this committee, since we started 2009, we never took a study tour. I don't know why. Because other committees, they are just going in and out, but with us, I don't know what is the problem, and it worries me a lot.
Can you open these windows, man? Am I the only one? But I need to read here. Far better. Thank you. We love you all. That's the situation, Mr. Gala. That was it. Obama. I saw your hand.
No.
Okay. Sorry. Mama Nyalo.
Thank you, Chair. I think if we can arrange a meeting with the chair, the house chair, maybe he can explain that because we really don't understand this. All committees have gone out. What about us? I think if we can call him to come and explain, maybe we can understand.
Mr. Fandel?
Yes, I think the problem is with the place we want to go. So we just need to find some new places and put a new request in. I mean, if we start doing that, maybe we go next year sometime. I don't know. But maybe we should find somewhere else that is a better place where nobody else has gone. Cuba or something like that, you know.
Now, I've always been suspecting you.
Yes, send money there. We need to go and see what that money is spent on.
I've always been suspecting you. Yes. Leandra, your father is a communist. It's confirmed today. It's confirmed. It's official. Mama?
Let's try Africa then. Let's try Africa. Yes, let's try Africa.
But you must find the reason.
Well, the reasons are all there, save for our researcher who is not with us now. We don't have any apology from her. Oh, yeah.
So we have the researcher for fisheries here. Maybe he can give us some good idea what fishing is up in Africa.
Okay, that would be can we agree that let's go ahead with our meeting now, and then perhaps when the officials are not here, we can take our own discussion. Are we fine with that? Okay. Let's then get straight to the business of the day. The business of the day is about us being briefed about subsidies and tariffs, and how they impact on agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. Mr. Ndomela, the first.
Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. It gives us back on this very interesting topic. It's a very interesting area, and it's one area that needs a lot of balancing, knowing that there are different interests at play here. There's the interest of the country, the interests of the sector, our farmers. There's also, you know, our bilateral agreements that we enter into with certain countries. Is also the multilateral forum that we also that we are members of, and this issue of tariffs and subsidies then becomes a bit more challenging. I have with me here Dr. Ngangweni, who is the acting CDG Economic Development, Trade and Marketing in the department, as well as Mr. Billy Morokolo, who's our Director Trade and Marketing. He also sits in the International Trade Administration Committee, which is a committee that is that falls under the DTI. Well, maybe to just make short comments on the issues that have the Chair talked about this morning. Just for the information of the committee, the minister last week was booked off for the rest of the month. So I think that is why you got that apology that the minister won't be attending today. Chair will follow up on the land bank issue, the appointments, the filling of those vacancies. Relating to your comments on the governance of entities, I think it will be to the interest of the committee just to check the report that was presented to the recent cabinet Likutla, or 2-3 weeks ago, it was presented by the Presidential Review Committee on the state-owned entities, and it made about 31 recommendations, some of whom relate to the governance of the state-owned entities. They looked at the state-owned entities in totality, both in the national sphere, the provincial sphere, as well as the local sphere. So there are that report, which is a high-level report presented to the cabinet committee, to the cabinet Likutla, on what actions need to be taken in order to render the governance of these state-owned entities, you know, uniform throughout. It touches on the remuneration of CEOs, the appointment of the boards, and so on and so on, and the monitoring and evaluation of the performance of these state-owned entities. I think that is where maybe you would be interested in. But of course, the next step is the implementation. And one last comment relating to, I think it would appreciate if you make that visit to the SA Navy regarding the vessels. Last week, I had a meeting with the head of the Navy relating to the crisis that we're in, on the problems that we're in, and then we reached certain agreements. For example, that they gave us a firm date of saying that by mid-October the vessels will be out. But before that, it will be staggered. Maybe it will be one vessel, maybe, you know, October. You know, they won't be out at the same time. And then we also agreed that on a monthly meeting, my team and his team are going to meet in order to review progress the presentation, I would ask Billy Murokolo to lead us in the in that aspect. Thank you.
Maybe just to to wrap up on the on that commentary. Perhaps we asked now to finalize, you know, that date of that oversight visit. What is clear is that maybe as we are not going to be going, not even a maybe, I guess it's a definite not to be going this coming week at least. Perhaps we may find time, depending on our availability and our programs as well. And of course also on the program itself, because it's going to be recess time. We'll have to check on that availability from the committee secretariat point of view. If that is fine, members. Mr. Bro?
Yeah. Chairperson, are you talking now of visiting Simonstown? Fine, Chair. May I just say that Simonstown is not very far from here. And it could be a day visit. We don't have to go and spend a longer period. So if we can fit in any time, Chair, we should do it. As a matter of fact, we should do it ASAP. What I wanted to ask, arising from the statements made by the acting DG, is the report that he's talking of regarding an investigation done into state-owned entities. Is this report available? Is it a report for public consumption, or is it still somewhere in secret? Because it is important that we are abreast of what is happening. Because, Chairperson, if one looks at the functions of many of these state-owned entities, I have a grave question mark. Are they really adding value? Are they really benefiting the sector, the broad population? Are they assisting in seeing to it that we grow sectors, that we are growing job creation? Those are the vital issues for us. And we have a ticking bomb out there. I mean, you can't have a situation where 16 million people are living on state grants. Are these state-owned entities doing anything to, on the one hand, get those people out of that poverty trap? So it's important to us to find out what is happening there. Because what one reads, in the absence of actual factual information being provided, Chairperson, what one reads tells you that in some of these state-owned entities, the guys are getting excessive remuneration, driving around in beautiful, you know, motor cars which you and I, Mr. Ntombela, will never be able to afford, and doing nothing on the ground. And I think that we as a country, and especially we as parliament, need to see that we bring these issues to book and that we find alternatives. Otherwise, Chairperson, I can only see bigger problems for us and bigger trouble coming. I'll leave the rest to what I've read here and what I see in these tariffs and all that, some dangers over there. But, Chairperson, I just want to remind you regarding the whole issue of the nominations of people to serve on various boards. You see, Chairperson, I'm guided here by Article 55 of the Constitution. And Article 55 says the following. 55.2 says the National Assembly must provide for mechanisms, A, to ensure that all executive organs of state in the national sphere of government are accountable to it, and B, to maintain oversight of sub 1, the exercise of national executive authority, including the implementation of legislation, and 2, any organ of state. Now, Chairperson, when it comes to my mind, in my humble understanding, any organ of state which has to report to this entity, Parliament, as a committee of parliament, we represent parliament. What my understanding is, sir, is that when it comes to appointing people to such boards, there should actually be some or other process, a formalized process. Now, what we need to do, Chair, is I don't think, I'm guilty too, that we really pay attention to what appears here. Because we are being hoodwinked that, yes, you may, you know, submit a name or whatever. But let me tell you, Chairperson, that name ends up in the dustbin. I mean, have we, thus far, I can't remember us having notched up any successes in the type of appointments that we have recommended. It just so happens that the person that's recommended by us happens to be recommended by other entities and the person is appointed. But my take is that the role of Parliament is being, if I may say so, in certain instances, deliberately undermined. And I don't want to blame the people sitting here in front of me, but some officials, Chairperson, would do their utmost to see that we are reduced to a situation where we may send in a name, but nothing would happen to it. So all I'm asking, Chairperson, is let the Constitution talk. Thank you.
Just before you came in, Mr. Sabram, we did deliberate on the matter and agree that in our next session we need to receive a feedback on what transpired out of our request on the land bank issue. What we did say and agree upon in this committee was that we need to be kept abreast of what could have transpired out of a process that led to the land bank appointment of the current board. There was a request that we fill another vacancy, which we refused for all intents and purposes, precisely because we were awaiting that feedback, which we never received. But also importantly, what we also are agreeing upon is that we request the legal team here in Parliament to guide us on some of these processes leading towards amendments to a number of entities' legislations that are governing these entities. But that's what we're also saying. Because that constitutional provision has also to be guided by a particular legislation that governs a particular entity. So that's where we are with regards to a number of these entities that we are, you know, exercising oversight on. In other words, they limit us to only a role of being a post person. That's what most of those legislations do. Now, what we are trying to do here, we're trying to engage parliamentary legal team so that we initiate ourselves like we do possess that right as Parliament, that of initiating a legislation. If the executive is taking its own time, if we also see it fit ourselves, that we certainly can initiate a particular legislation. We possess that right. It's there in the Constitution as well. Okay, members, I think that should be it, Mrs. Stein.
I just wanted to ask, from the introduction of the acting DG, there was no mention of DTI. Is there no one from DTI present at this meeting? Because I understood someone from their department would also be here, or it looked like it in the...
They wrote to us saying that now that DAF is going to be here, therefore there is no need for them to be here. Now... Okay.
The email says that it is not their role to come and present on the tariffs and subsidies with regard to agriculture, processing, fisheries. It is the responsibility of DAF.
can only assume that their response is guided by DAF's participation in ITEC. But you are here to respond. That's in a nutshell, Mr. Steyn, the simple response. Mr. Ndombela?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On the issue of the status of that Presidential Review Committee report on the SOE, I'll have to check with the Presidency what the status of that report is. But, you know, from the top of my head, I think it's in the public domain, but one has got to check that one. You know, it goes through all aspects of the SOEs. You know, the questions that Mr. Abrams were raising, are they effective? Do they contribute to a developmental stage and all those issues? But the founding principles that all SOEs should be, you know, developmental state oriented in order to ensure that economic development, you know, happens, that they serve the purposes that they were created for. There's also a recommendation around the founding legislation of this SOE. You recall, Chair, that each SOE has got a governing legislation. The recommendation is that we have one legislation that will cover all of them, but I don't know whether practically that would be possible. But that's the recommendation that is made regarding that. If you then allow me, Chair, we'll then move on to the presentation. We also got a notification this morning that DTI will not be here. Our understanding all along is that we're going to make a joint presentation because the International Trade Administration Commission, you know, falls within their ambit, but we participate there. Unfortunately, Mr. Morokolo is also a part-time commissioner in that commission, so that would help a great deal. So if you allow me, Chair, I would then ask Mr. Morokolo to go on with the presentation.
Thank you, Acting DG, and good morning, honorable members, Chairperson, and the special guest to this committee. After stepping the brief to presentation on tariffs and subsidies, I took a partial approach to the subject. While the presentation is covering agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, the emphasis of the presentation is more going to be around agriculture than on the fisheries and the forestry because of the recent amalgamation between the three portfolios, agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. So, Chairperson, as the director responsible for marketing in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries, as well as wearing another cap as a part-time commissioner at the International Trade Administration Commission. The approach that I'm going to follow is as follows in terms of the content, just to give you a framework or in a synoptic way, the kind of issues that will be covered by my presentation. The first one will be the legal basis for the administration of tariffs in South Africa on the basis of the role that is done by ITEC. The international trade commitment, whilst noting that South Africa is a player in the global arena, the international trade policy landscape, where we are as a country in relation to agriculture, and then rewinding back to 1994, when the Uruguay Round Agreement was signed, the precursor to the WTO, and then the South African current tariff bound and applied rates, just to give you an indication of the levels at which the various tariffs apply to different products. The imports scenario, 2010, just a picture of the trade, the trade balance on agricultural products. The producer support estimate by countries. Producer support estimate is, in simple terms, just the language to say, subsidies provided by different governments to their farmers. They normally use the term producer support estimate. And then we move forward to 2000, where the South African government entered into a trade agreement with the EU, normally called the TDTA, the Trade Development and Cooperation Agreement, what it entails and what it means to agriculture, just a bit of background information there, as well as the industry comments on the overall tariff landscape in the country. What is the feeling of the industry, the agricultural sector, in relation to the tariff position for a range of agricultural products. Then also the departmental perspective, the view, from the department on the basis of the comments that we have, received from the different industries. As well as just calling it a walking the tightrope, because it's not an easy process to mediate, between producers and processors in as far as the application of the tariff policy is concerned. It's a balancing act. And then summary and conclusions. And Chairperson, I also took the liberty of just providing an additional slide to give you a hint of what is the state of play with regards to the poultry, the poultry issue with the Brazil. I thought it might actually be of interest to the members. Like I said, the basis for the work done by the Commission, ITEC, is based on the Act number 71 of 2002, which is actually aimed at establishing an efficient and effective system for the administration of international trade. So with a linkage to a range of rules, regulations that are governed by the WTO, the World Trade Organization. So the ITEC is an institution that implements some of the trade rules on behalf of South Africa, Swaziland, Lesotho, and Namibia, the SACU countries. One is based in South Africa, but it does its work on behalf of the South African Customs Union in terms of the South African Customs Agreement. And the objective of the Act is achieved through the administration of a number of interventions or instruments, if I can use that way. The first one is the customs tariffs. Customs tariffs, which is actually the thrust of this presentation. Tariffs that are imposed on the importation of a range of products, maize, wheat, poultry. What are the systems, what are the procedures, followed in the administration of tariffs? That is one leg of the work stream done by ITEC. The second one is on the import and export control, the regulation of import and exports. There has to be a systematic way in which the trade flow between South Africa and other trading members has to be governed. So it is under that pillar of the Act that the import and exports are controlled, as well as the administration of trade remedies. The trade remedies, we're talking of the anti-dumping duties, which is the instrument that has been applied against the poultry imported from Brazil. The second one is the countervailing duties. These are the duties that are imposed once, South Africa or an industry feels there is an immediate surge of imports of a particular category of products into the country. So which, solicits an immediate response. So you can actually utilize that kind of an instrument. One of the special safeguards. So it's just one of those kind of mechanisms that we have in place to deal with international trade in a situation where it threatens material injury to the domestic industry. So in terms of ITEC, those are the kind, that is actually the basis upon which trade is adjudicated, through ITEC. In terms of the international trade commitments impacting on tariff policy administration in SACU, because we're talking about South Africa, but like I said, the application of this Act, it looks into South Africa, Swaziland, Botswana, Lesotho, and Namibia. South Africa has entered into a number of agreements with a number of trading partners around the world. The thrust of this agreement is to open market access. Everybody wants to expand the access to lucrative markets across the world, and I think this is the spirit of the trade agreements that we have signed. And in broad terms, we have got about four trade agreements in terms of the blocks that we're dealing, doing trade with. The first one is the South African Customs Union, the countries that I've just indicated, which is actually the oldest customs union in the world. I think it was established in 1910. The second one, we have got the South African Development Community, SADC. We've also got a free trade agreement in SADC, where all the imports originating from SADC comes into South Africa free of duty. There are no import duties, you know, applied to all the products, agricultural products originating from SADC. There's the EU, the European Union, free trade agreement, where most of the tariffs, you know, through the implementation of the trade agreement, the TDCA, the Trade and Development Cooperation Agreement, there was an understanding that over a period of time, the two, you know, parties, Europe and South Africa, will phase out their tariff protection on a range of products over a period of time. While South Africa was granted more time to phase out the protection, and Europe was given a smaller time. They always call it asymmetry. The speed at which these tariffs are phased out is different. South Africa is a bit slower, and Europe is going to implement the phase out, you know, quite rapidly. And if you look at the total picture in terms of the EU trade agreement, it's just a few products on which tariffs are still at a bit, you know, a higher level. We call these products sensitive products for the reasons that they have got food security considerations, rural development considerations, and, these sensitive products is wheat, sugar, maize, dairy, as well as meat. These are the products, you know, when the negotiators, hammered the deal in 2000, the agreement was that these products should not be put in the same basket with other products whose tariffs will be reduced to zero over a period of time, hence the title sensitive products. And lately, or currently, about 96% of imports from the EU are currently at zero, import duty. And the possibility or the chance of increasing duties on some of those products which are not classified as sensitive, it's very, very limited. We always talk about the policy space to increase tariffs on those products. It's very limited because of the nature of the agreement that South Africa signed with EU. And then another one is the European Free Trade Agreement, and most of the tariffs also in that respect are zero. This is, we're talking about countries like Norway, Liechtenstein, and Switzerland. So these four trade agreements that South Africa has entered into. On the international trade policy, you know, landscape, in terms of the TDCA, the Trade and Development Cooperation Agreement, our trade with Europe, the document or the agreement made provision for what they call a standstill, you know, provision, which obviously means that once South Africa has agreed to set the tariff at a particular level for a specific product, even if there is a threat of material injury based on the flux of imports originating from Europe into South Africa, we cannot increase the tariffs on that particular product purely because of this standstill provision that, you know, is embedded in the trade agreement. So this. Like now, the poultry industry is concerned about the increasing imports of poultry, you know, products from Netherlands. And Netherlands being part of the EU, it's not going to be very easy to say let's increase import duties on poultry originating from Netherlands purely because of this standstill provision that is part of the trade agreement that we have signed. And then also certain tariff lines, including maize, wheat, sugar, and all those things are excluded, like I said, because of the sensitive nature of this product, according to the classification that, you know, the negotiators, you know, agreed to. And also looking at the landscape, you know, South Africa has a fairly open market, and approximately 40% of agricultural imports from all destinations enter the country duty-free. very open, you know, market environment, and if 40% of products come in at you know, zero duty, you can imagine, you know, yeah. And just to give you an indication, South Africa has got about 996 agricultural tariff lines. You know, you have all these lines, mutton, you know, beef, poultry. It's quite a lot of products that we trade with, and each one of those products has got a code, and this code, we call it you know, the, you know, the tariff line. And out of the 996, 396 are at 0%, and I think this is about 40%. You know, 396 over 996 is 39.7, I think, something like that, which gives you about 40%. And that also indicates the extent of the openness of the South African agricultural market based on that. And at the end of the TDCA, which I think is coming to the end, to an end this year, at the end of the TDCA, we're likely to have, or we will have, a number of about 881 tariff lines at zero, which means more than about 90% of agricultural imports from Europe will come in duty-free. And in terms of the agreement, we cannot increase tariff protection on those products. That is the nature of the agreement as it is written now. The line subject to a formula duty, I mean, the wheat, maize, and sugar, like I said, you know, they have been exempted because of the sensitive kind of characteristics that has been, you know, accorded to, you know, to those products. Let's go back to 1994, the Euro go around. What the Euro go around is actually a discussion at which different countries agreed to lift the regulations around the, you know, trading agricultural products, like we had in South Africa, where the market environment was regulated through the Marketing Act, where you had quantitative restrictions, export controls, import controls. Then this meeting, I think it was a watermark, you know, a discussion where, you know, big trading partners agreed to lift those restrictive practices and introduce tariffs as a way of regulating international trade. That took place in 1994, and I think that coincided with the review of the Marketing of Agricultural Products Act in South Africa, when the market environment in South Africa was also moved from a regulated environment to a deregulated environment, in line with the decision that was taken at, you know, at the Uruguay round. And during that process, the intention, I think, the expectation was to make sure that as South Africa moved from a regulated environment in terms of those restrictions and everything else that protected the interest of the South African farmers, the intention was to keep, or the expectation was to keep the import duties at a level that would still preserve protection that was granted by the farmers during the regulated, you know, era. That was the intention, that was the expectation from the sector, but I think that did not actually happen. That did not happen, as indicated by the openness of the South African, you know, agricultural market, 40%. All agricultural tariffs were bound, and South Africa applied rates for agricultural products were set at levels well below the boundaries of WTO. So the WTO will set, you know, levels at which countries can set their import duties. They call it a bound rate and a base rate. But in terms of during the negotiations, I think South Africa was a bit ambitious, so the negotiators were a bit ambitious and forward-looking. I don't know. But at the end of the day, the levels at which some of the agricultural tariffs were set was actually well below the levels that was actually allowed by the WTO. So that's where the policy space is there, but you cannot really, you know, utilize it. And comparatively, I mean, if you look at the South African tariff landscape with the rest of the world, our average tariffs are still very low. The average is about 9%. And then if you look at the OECD, the Organization for Economic and Cooperation and Development, you know, economies, the rich kind of, you know, economies, their average is about 17%. And the non-OECD countries, about 14%. So in that basket, I think South Africa is actually, very liberal in as far as setting a market, a protection is concerned. Import tariffs are in the main lower than what South African agricultural products experience in the export markets. You know, ours are very low, but then if you were to check what levels of tariff our products experience when they go into the export market, actually the difference is high.
Mm.
So the net effect is that the trade balance or the trade position is negative. I talked about the bound rate and the applied rate that were used as a principle by the WTO to say you can go beyond this thing, you cannot go above this thing. And this graph merely indicates the levels at which the tariffs were held for a number of products, 1, 2, 52, I think those are the tariff lines or the chapters. The red line, the bound rates, and the blue lines, the applied rates. So the red line indicates the level, the maximum at which you can go as a country or South Africa. And the blue line is where the South African negotiator said we will, increase our tariffs up to this level. So you've got that difference. We call it that policy space, the difference between the blue line and the red line. But in effect, because of the trade agreement, we cannot exploit that space and increase the import duties because of the standstill provision that is, in the agreement. Again, just to give you an indication of the trade landscape in terms of imports, you can see that 29% of imports originate from the EU, which is taking a bigger chunk, and then there's others, 34%, that is a mix of a number of countries, small, very, maybe below 5%, just a combination of below 1%. China is still 6%, Mercosur, that is Uruguay, Brazil, Chile, and all those, the South American countries, the East African community, the COMESA, and the SADC. It just gives you an indication of, the quantities originating from those, the agricultural, from those countries. I talked about the producer support estimate in the content. And just a simple language to say the subsidies. It's normally expressed as a percentage of the gross farm receipts, what the farmer receives, in relation to how much government supports, the industry or the farmers. In simple terms, EU 34%. What it means is that for every rent that a farmer earns in the EU, 34 cents, not a rent, a euro, 34 cents. It comes in the form of government support. OECD 31%. The same explanation holds. Japan 58%. It's more than half. It's like government is putting a lot of money into the government. Into the farmers' coffers. The US is 20%. China is 6%. South Africa 5%. So this is mainly the border measures or tariff protection. Only that is what the farmers benefit from. So if you look at if you compare all those levels, you can see that South African farmer is sitting at a very disadvantaged position compared to the rest of our trading partners. And the percentage indicates the extent of policy intervention by the state in the sector and contribute about 10% depression in the world price of commodities, mainly due to subsidies. Because if government is pumping more money to support the production of a particular product, more farmers will go for that product. And once we have increased production of that particular commodity, the global price of that commodity will actually go down because there's surplus of it in the market. And for those farmers that are not subsidized, they will suffer the consequences because of the depression of the global price for that particular product. And what it means is that unsubsidized production in the global market is very unprofitable. If you take into consideration all these issues, if farmers are not subsidized or if they are not supported to the extent that you have it in Europe, in the OECD, Japan, US, and other trading partners, then yeah, the farmers in South Africa are in some kind of a very, you know, tight position. 2001, we entered into the South African Trade and Development, you know, Cooperation Agreement with Europe. That policy space that was guaranteed through the control board and everything else, which also had its own disadvantages, was removed. There's no tariffs will be zero this year, I think, yeah, with the exception of those products that I indicated. Because I think after 10 years, in terms of the TDCA, the intention was to move from whatever level of protection to zero. But sensitive products have also limits beyond which tariffs cannot increase. You know, your maize, wheat, sugar, and dairy products. Whilst the standstill provision does not apply to these products, there is also a limit beyond which you cannot increase tariff protection. And I think this one just gives you an indication, like dairy, 500 per kilogram, wheat, 50 cent ad valorem, you know, 50% based on the value of the wheat that is purchased. I think ad valorem is the per value. Meat, 50%, and sugar, 105%. The question that always arises is, where is the policy space against cheap imports? Do we really have any space to maneuver? And you know, yeah, fusion farmers against these subsidies. And the question is always, the answer is always very mute. You know, you always say, well, maybe not, but the net effect is that there's no policy space. It's very tight, reduced by the TDCA, EFTA, standard commitments, and the W2 boundaries. Maybe we need to renegotiate the new standstill provision in the TDCA, because the TDCA has run its course, and it will be replaced by what they call Economic Partnership Agreement that South Africa is negotiating with Europe. Also, it's very difficult negotiations taking place there. I understand even the president is in Brussels as part of the discussions around the trade issues. Maybe they will come up with, you know, a plan to relieve the pressure that the farmers are experiencing. Industry comments, I think, the industry comments, I can just summarize it in one line, that they cannot compete because of subsidies originating from countries that subsidize their farmers. And then protection of that by specific duties is generally very low, as duties do not keep trend with price and cost increases. I'll just give you an indication of the graph below. The TDC was asymmetrical in favor of the EU and must be rectified. So if you look at the benefits of signing the Trade and Development Cooperation, Europe is actually gaining more benefits than South Africa. That's why we call it asymmetrical. You know, it's unequal or inequitable if you look at it from that, you know, basis. Policy space, consideration for the conversion of specific duties to ad valorem to preserve the protection over time. Duties, you can set them at ad valorem, or per value, or per kilogram, or a combination of that, or you can even use a, you know, some kind of a formula, like we have for maize and wheat and sugar. But the second time is where you say per kilogram, like on dairy, just for one to give an indication. Milk powder, the applied rate is 4.50 per kilogram. Milk, whey powder, 4.50. Butter, 4.50. I mean, 5 francs. Cheese, 5 francs. And this was set like in 2000, based on the prices that were prevailing in 2000. And the protection is still the same. Once the value, the price of these things has increased. So there's actually an erosion of protection over a period of time. And I think the view here is maybe we should actually give consideration to the conversion of this, you know, specific duties to ad valorem, so that they keep pace with the value of the underlying product that is being traded. Just the graph indicates that over a period of time, you know, the protection that is granted to those different products has gone down. What is the department's approach or the view of all these issues? The just tariff policy approach proposed, what we did as a department, you know, having taken consideration of all these you know, anomalies, was to, you know, approach ITAC and DTI and say to DTI, the extent of subsidization that is taking place out there,
is actually creating a lot of material injury to the domestic sector, and we need to have some kind of in a proactive way an approach to deal with some of the sensitivities as and when they arise. And we also know that South Africa liberalized trade and deregulated markets faster. We are very ambitious. We were very fast to move and to drop these things at a much faster and a greater rate than the rest of the world, and even beyond what was allowed by the WTO. So that's why I'm saying the sense of ambition or bullishness, drove the negotiators to take those kind of positions. And that realization that the tariff dispensation as applied may not be sufficient to encourage expanded domestic production of some agricultural products. Because if you, as a farmer, before you put your rent to the soil, the seed to the soil, if the product that you produce is facing international onslaught from the influx of maybe cheap imports, you actually think twice before going to the production of that particular product. That is a reality. And then that agriculture still remains an exception in the multilateral trading system. Much higher distortions are tolerated compared to industrial sectors, and therefore the sector deserves differential treatment. The way in which tariff approach from the DTI happened, or from ITEC, it was a uniform approach. The tariff in application to the automotive industry, to the chemical sector, to the textiles, clothing, to the wood sector, and everything, it was uniform. But then what the department did not take into consideration was the unique characteristics and the unique features of agriculture in terms of the subsidies that we always talk about, that other countries subsidize their farmers, the rural development imperatives that the sector is carrying, the conservation of the natural landscape, food security, and all these other things. And we thought this must actually be considered in the policy discussions within the DTI, so that we have a differentiated approach to deal with the tariffication of agricultural products, different from the rest of other products, which are not necessarily receiving subsidies from their government, like maybe the automotive industry. It's different. Usually the tariff dispensation considered a price disadvantage and did not broadly consider other factors, as I indicated. Just looking at the price disadvantage, the producer disadvantage, yes, then you impose a higher duty, you impose a countervailing duty, you impose a safeguard, you impose an anti-dumping duty. But for agriculture, it goes beyond the price disadvantage, like I indicated, food security and other elements must be considered. The generic application of the tariff policy also was contested. And then we came up with a document to say maybe ITEC should actually take the following approach. And fortunately, the principles that we proposed were considered by the Department of Trade and Industry, and they were incorporated into the National Industrial Policy Framework to say the application of tariff policy will have to be sensitive and must be very selective depending on which sector and the characteristics of that sector. Like I said, food security, rural development, absorption of low-skilled labor, high labor absorption rates, per million rand invested, the source of the raw materials for downstream agro-processing. I think it's those kind of multiplier kind of benefits that we thought will actually assist the DTI to re-look into how they apply tariff policy in South Africa. The case-by-case argument for flexibility in the application of tariff policy on agricultural products is incorporated in the National Industrial Policy Framework, as I indicated, and also already applied by ITEC. In terms of the process that we are following now, for every application that, for a tariff application that involves an agricultural product, before ITEC could pronounce on the application, the department is involved and the marketing council, so that we use this tacit knowledge that we have within the department, within NAMC, to guide ITEC to arrive at a decision that will safeguard the interests of the sector. And then the implementation of policy and supplementary tariff policy must take a strategic approach and generate wider impact on the broader agricultural development. Because normally when farmers apply or the industry applies for a tariff, it's just protection, protection, protection. And you are saying that tariff as an instrument of, you know, industrial policy, when applied, it must look into to generate broader, you know, socio-economic benefits. Like, it should not just be about protection, protection. Whether it's going to guarantee food security, whether it's going to guarantee rural development, whether it's going to guarantee downstream beneficiation of agro-processing, whether it's going to guarantee the preservation of the rural landscape, you know, all those kind of attributes must be factored into the application for, you know, tariff by the industry. Towards the achievement of certain long-term outcomes, industry growth, competitiveness, jobs, exports, and dealing with the development policies and programs, and not implemented in isolation. Because always when we receive applications for, you know, this tariff, these other, you know, broader ramifications are not taken into consideration. And I think this is the kind of a reorientation that we are trying to infuse in the industry, to try to think about this kind of a broader approach to tariffication than just having a linear approach to, you know, to the application of tariffs. The importance of the sector. Again, when we're talking tariffs, like if you were to look into the logistics, the provision of logistics support to the sector. We always say grain, the movement of grain in South Africa has moved from rail to road. Mm. And now we want to revert it from road to rail. And now when we go and negotiate with Transnet Freight Rail to say we need more capacity, wagon capacity. And the first thing that they will do is to go into their balance sheet and say, but the contribution of the agricultural products on our bulk freight is not common or something percent, and therefore it's not important. And that brings into the discussion a different dimension in terms of the role of the sector. Whilst it might not in monetary terms contribute that much, but then in terms of the socio-economic impacts, you know, the distribution of food across the economy, in all those things, alleviation of food insecurity and the reduction of food prices and all these things, I think must be factored into those kind of discussions so that we take a broader approach to the application of policy than just this, you know, a linear view like I indicated. Walking the tightrope, striking the balance. Application for tariff increases by primary producers. If farmers were to apply for, say, the wheat farmers, like now, they have submitted an application for the increase in the import duty for wheat. On the other hand, you have millers who wants to source wheat as cheap as possible. So it's only that kind of a contestation between the farmers and the downstream industry. And that is the balance that ITEC must always maintain to make sure that both parties, they might not be happy, but at least the outcome must be justified. Tariff increases on imported raw agricultural products have a potential to increase food prices. If we say, okay, let's increase the import duty of wheat, the unintended consequence of that decision might be that food prices, or the short price of bread, will actually go higher because of the increased import duty. The increase might be marginal, but over a period of time, bread might become unaffordable to an average household in South Africa.
Then what kind of primary product?
An effect of discouraging expanded domestic production, like I indicated. I mean, if you say we don't support this product, if you don't, you know, protect it, in comparison with what other countries do, then it might really not have a desired effect of, you know, increasing domestic production. Well, given the scenario above, I think it's expected to perform a balancing act to straddle the two divides, farmers and the millers. Farmers and the downstream industry. You know, we must come up with some kind of a solution that will. But I think from agriculture's point of view, our first point of call is to make sure that is sustainable production taking place. And then from the DTS perspective, may also link to our expectations that industrialization must also take place. And I think that is the broader policy, you know, context that we are looking towards when we apply this tariff policy. An industry-based, you know, approach to tariff setting, looking at broader interests of the entire industry value chain. So another issue of, you know, reorienting the mindset of the industry to say, when we apply tariffs, it must actually benefit the totality of the value chain. We're talking about the wheat industry in South Africa. Let's not talk only talk about farmers. Let's not only talk about the millers. Let's not only talk about the bakers. What is the competitiveness of the totality of this? If we were to increase a tariff from X to Y, or reduce the tariff from X to Y, I think that is the kind of an approach that we are trying to, you know, to canvas the broader interest of the society, of the community. Summary and conclusions. IPEC operates under a very prescribed, you know, legal framework or environment in terms of the Act, and certain decisions must be within the framework of the Act. What is legal? The sector uses tariff policy as a strategy to drive certain socio-economic outcomes, not only a linear approach like I said, but the outcomes of applying this tariff policy must be much broader than what the industry currently looks at. We're looking at competitiveness, increasing production, food security, profitability, sustainability, and contribution to rural development, rather than a narrow focus on production. As well as to say that government has introduced a number of, you know, a policy, you know, instruments like, you know, the new growth path, the national industrial policy framework, and the application of these policies must not be in isolation of those. They must be seen to be contributing towards the achievement of these policies. And when you put them to a test, into a litmus test, to say if we do this thing, how does it contribute to the achievement of some of these, you know, policy expectations? It must show that, you know, it must show some kind of relevance. And I think that is the what we are trying to agitate for. And hence, you know, it's like trying to straddle two countervailing forces. And also noting that in the long run, the world might move into a free trade area where tariffs become irrelevant. Countries will start to produce certain commodities on the basis of their competitiveness. And are South African farmers ready to venture into that era? As and when it happens. It's not happening now, but in the long term, we might find ourselves in this kind of a situation, because there is a range of free trade agreements that everybody is signing almost every second day. The available policy space is tight, but could consider conversion of those specific duties, like I indicated, those 450 per kilogram, 500 per kilogram for the dairy products. I think that is the least that can be done at the moment, to say let's convert. But once you convert this thing and base it on a value basis, there's always the risk of under invoicing, where people say, okay, the value is no longer 1,000, a million rands per consignment. They might reduce it, like it's happening in cigarettes, where it's this counterfeit and whatever it is, under invoicing. So those are the kind of, you know, risks that will always crop up once you try to, you know, to manage this kind of. And also the tariffs are not the only tools that are available to remedy international trade distortions. Like I said, we have got anti-dumping duties, the countervailing special safeguards. Though some of these things are very complex and very, very time-consuming to implement, but they are available, I think, in terms of the law. Like I indicated, the anti-dumping duty against the poultry from Brazil has been, you know, instituted. And Chairperson, I think the last slide is just to give you a bit of a background on the poultry issue. That it started in 2001, where the South African Poultry Association approached IPEC to say that the industry is suffering some material injury on the basis of the importation of cheap poultry, the old base and some boneless cuts from Brazil. A full-scale investigation was undertaken by the Commission. And in 2012 January, based on the evidence that was put before the Commission, the dumping allegation was confirmed, and ITEC recommended the imposition of preliminary dumping duties. Preliminary in the sense that they are imposed for a period of 6 months to allow the exporting country to provide any additional information to counteract that decision, if available. So the preliminary duties were imposed 62.93% and 46.95% on whole days and boneless cuts imported from Brazil.
June 2012, the government of Brazil, I think it was aggrieved by the decision of South Africa to impose provisional duties and approached the South African government to have a bilateral discussion to see if this matter could be resolved at a bilateral level without having to go to the WTO dispute resolution mechanism. The consultation took place July 2012 in Geneva, where South African, you know, the Department of, it was actually led by the Department of Trade and Industry. They met with the Brazilian counterpart to see how this issue could be resolved. I think the issue that Brazil raised, you know, bordered on the calculation of this the dumping margins, the 62-93, the methodology that was applied, you know, was followed. It was more around the approach and the methodology than the substance of the allegation. And the matter was referred back. After the consultations, the mediating parties referred the matter back, I mean the matter back to the two countries. In our case, it was referred to Minister of Davis to say there's quite a number of questions that Brazil raised, and those questions have been, you know, referred back to the Commission ITEC to check whether they are valid or invalid, and come up with a final report so that you know, the Commission comes up with a final determination of whether really dumping took place. But also this thing is taking place within the context of BRICS. BRICS, which is a political relationship. And I think, yeah, it's those kind of dynamics that must be taken into consideration when these kind of decisions are made. And then ITEC will re-look at the issues raised by Brazil and correct where appropriate and resubmit its findings on the basis of the questions that were raised. And then the currently the provisional anti-dumping duties have lapsed. They were imposed in January, and then they've run the course, they've lapsed. So we are now back to square one. We are now back to square one because we could not convince Brazil at Geneva to say we stand by what ITEC has actually, you know, the findings of ITEC. And Chairperson, I think that's the, in summary, where we are. In terms of the chicken imports, if you look at the total basket of imports, poultry, we're importing about 57% of our chicken or poultry requirements from Brazil, 9% from, Netherlands, and the balance, which is 8% from Argentina, and the rest from, you know, the rest of the world. The surge in imports from Brazil originate from the fact that, you know, Russia and China used to be the biggest consumers of, you know, poultry from all over the space, I think mainly from Brazil. But for some reason, they decided to have their own strong, you know, poultry production facilities in these two countries, China and Brazil. I mean, China and Russia. And when those developments were taking place, Brazil was not aware that, you know, there's this development, and they were like churning out poultry like, you know, there's no tomorrow. And immediately the market was flooded. I mean, they were self-sufficient, and Brazil was sitting with this huge consignment of poultry. What do we do with this product? And the easiest market or the easiest route was Africa. So that's why we have this kind of a situation in the poultry industry in South Africa today. So, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think this is the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Members, that is a mouthful. And as I said earlier on, we are starting a process which will not end today. There are a number of other areas that we'll also have to factor in this whole exercise. Among others, you know, you only read now that you have what is referred to as agricultural policy framework, which we'll also have to get a copy of and perhaps further enlighten ourselves when we're looking at these issues more broader. This same discussion us to food price discussions, which I don't think will do justice if you start it now. And then, of course, also your integrated growth and development plan of the department, read together with the national development plan. I think we'll also have to get that briefing from that planning commission with the department here as well. I'm also keen, it's not related, but somewhat, you know, if we were to go through all of these write-ups, and it really, you know, comes up my mind when I read yesterday's paper, the High Court decision that resolved on the Banar and Two Point, call it what? A measure, an acquisition, or measure? To an extent, you also might wish to get such a briefing. Also, that came through my mind is also a discussion. I'm told it has gone so far that it is only waiting for a signature, a measure between the two major fishing companies, Oceana and Lusitania. It's a matter that is seriously kept under wraps. I don't know why. Now these are all issues that are related to what we are talking about. I think in the main, what we seek to do as a committee, it is upon getting such a briefing, it is also to make the necessary input, which we haven't, so that we are able, as we are also informed, you must also correct us, Morokolo, Mr. Morokolo, that the processes that you usually get involved in, by and large, you know, they get to steamroll, you know, the agriculture, forest and fisheries, by DTI in this instance. That's another reason why we thought we should have, you know, the two departments here. We did not make a mistake. It's a great pity that DTI is not here. Okay, let's take, I saw Mr. Abrams' hand up, and Mr. Van Dalen, Mrs. Stein, Baba.
Mama. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, I'm always prone to be very critical, but today I must say that what I have heard from the Director of Marketing and Part-Time Commissioner was to me like manna from heaven. He gave us, to my mind, a honest and practical account of the state of affairs with regard to, in the main, our entire agricultural industry. And for that, I want to express my appreciation also to you, the Acting Director General. What I like, Chairperson, is when officials come here and don't tell us the things that the politicians tell them to tell us, so that we must all feel happy. We must be shocked into some or other form of action, Chairperson. Now, these are the sort of things that many of us have been complaining about. Chairperson, my problem is what Mr. Morokolo has given us today. And I take it that it has reached the political principles. They are aware of it. Is it being taken note of? We are not an implementation agency. We can only make recommendations. powers that be don't listen and don't act, the chairperson, all the efforts of Mr. Morokolo and anyone else will be a wasted effort. Because what I have seen over years, Chair, is that we have a problem in the way we govern. And that is that, unfortunately, you are not the sole implementing department. Agricultural issues, but the implementer of tariffs and things like that is again another department. And that department, rightfully, no, not rightfully, definitely wrongfully, decided that it had no business to be here today. And Chairperson, I feel that we should actually send a very strongly worded letter that they actually disrespected Parliament, not this committee. We are representing Parliament on an important issue. Now, Chairperson, coming down to the nitty-gritty, you see, my interest, Chair, is that whilst all these problems exist, and while some or other, you know, sector in government is investigating this, and there's a report there, and all sorts of things, what is happening on the ground? And what I want to ask Mr. Morokolo is the following. I'm a member of a very progressive co-op. Of course I'm a member of the ANC, which is progressive, but this particular co-op is extremely well, it's now a company, you know, the laws don't allow that type of co-op anymore, and the complaint was that we are sitting with surpluses at that time of grain. An investigation was done, and we came to the conclusion, the co-op came to the conclusion, the big boys there, you know, I'm a small fry, came to the conclusion that we are importing the equivalent of 800,000 chickens per day. And you've given the percentages. Basically, the bulk of it came from Brazil. And if we could, what one must remember is that every time you import 1 kilogram of chicken, you are importing with it 1 kilogram to 1.25 kilograms of maize, because that's a staple food. So what we are in effect doing is we are helping to create jobs in other countries at the expense of our people.
Mm.
Right. So, over R500 million has been spent. They have their abattoir up. The chicken houses of 43 farmers, including 5 of our people, have been built, but there are now problems. As it is claimed that we must provide cheap protein to our people and that importing the Brazilian chicken is cheaper. I'm sorry to say that is utter nonsense. On the supermarket shelf, they will not be told that this is Brazilian chicken and therefore it's 10% lesser. That doesn't happen. But what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that Mr. Morokolo has mentioned on many occasions here how there is a negative impact on the sustainability of our own agricultural enterprises. Now, if we are going to allow, and you have said here, Mr. Morokolo, that the anti-dumping duties that were imposed have lapsed. When you respond, will you please tell us when did it lapse? And is there any urgency on the part of the powers that be, DTI, and even your department, the political head, or whoever, to see to it that it is reinstated? Because what is now going to happen is that our industry here is going to suffer. And we don't realize that the number of jobs that we are putting at peril is going to be significant. And I don't know who decided that South Africa created 650,000 new agricultural jobs. Because I see agriculture jobs being lost on a daily basis. I see it happening. So I would like to know that. The other thing is, Chairperson, that if we take the various other components that make up agriculture, you take for example grain. Last year we had a surplus. Our people sold the grain at 1500 rand per ton. It was exported in the main. This year, America has a drought. You see, if someone sneezes somewhere else in the world, we catch the cold. So what is happening now is that those people that used to buy their maize from America are now looking for other markets. The price is currently shot up, I think it's what, 2.6, 2.7 a ton. So it's very close to double. In fact, I'm waiting until it's 3,000 because then I'll be paid out 2,700 rand a ton for my maize. I haven't sold it. So what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that while some farmers here are going to smile because they might be getting a better price, what we are doing, Chairperson, is the shooting up of the price of maize is going to impact on a variety of agricultural sectors. Mm. So forget about import duties and all that. Local consumption, you are going to pay more for food. And you said, Chairperson, it's a briefing on its own. But let me tell you that those effects are going to be very, very hard. What I'm asking for, therefore, Chairperson, from Mr. Ntombela and Mr. Morokolo and the team here, is do you want to tell us, think a little bit out of the box, if you take all these tendencies that are currently prevalent, where the South African farmer, and a farmer has no color, is left to all these various challenges, and there is no state support. I mean, fine, we are supporting some emerging farmers. Some of them are getting submerged. Some of them succeed to graduate to becoming slightly commercial, semi-commercial. But we are not in the main responsive to the problems in agriculture. For example, Chairperson, hundreds of thousands of hectares of grazing land in those regions that are dry in winter have burned down. Is there any support for those people, for those farmers, to provide feed and that sort of thing in order for them to sustain themselves and most importantly to keep the jobs of the people that are working for them? The answer is no. They are dependent on the charity of other farmers who fall in a category where they didn't have this kind of problem to assist them. So what I would like to know from you is how do you see the scenario developing if nothing is done? If we don't succeed in getting, you call something still or something, regarding tariffs that are bound and applied, I mean, we are bound, we sign our lives off. We are bound for until donkey's years. And if you want to now go and negotiate or renegotiate, you are caught flat-footed. You renegotiate from a position of weakness. Mm. And let's accept one thing, brothers and sisters. Nobody loves South Africa. They love the money that they can make out of you. They say of the Americans, they will spend a dime on you if they know that they can get a dollar out of you. And that's business. That's how things work. So, Chairperson, the scenario is, Mr. Morokolo is very diplomatic. I'm glad that he has come out reasonably openly, which I appreciate. If we don't put facts on the table, we are not going to be able to be shocked into doing something. Finally, Chairperson, you take some of our industries. You know, this suit that I'm wearing today, it says here, made in China.
Oh.
Yes, made in China. I used to wear extra form suits made by our daughters and our sisters here in Salt River. It's gone. Extra form is dead and buried. It's now called Queen's Park. You walk into Queen's Park today, all the goods are marked, made in China. The other day I got hold of a skipper given out by the Department of Health over here, bluntly saying, made in China. So what we are doing is we are helping the economies of other countries, because you see, we want to be in the Big Brother League. We must realize that we are a third world country. So, you know, if you can only afford a Toyota Corolla, rather stick to that. Forget the BMW 735s and the S500s and all that. We are not in that league as a country. Mm. And we don't realize that. Now, chairperson, you take the wool industry. Wool industry in South Africa, although there are plants that can churn wool into cloth and things can happen. And we've still got, you know, those sisters of ours, well, to me they are daughters, that worked at Rex Truform and other places that have closed down, that can still help to restart a clothing industry in our country. But now you've got all these tariff protections and all sorts of things. So it's a, you know, we say in Afrikaans, it's a mengelmoes, it's a complete mixture, it's a mixed basket of a variety of problems which we have allowed to develop. But our wool is leaving the country. If you take, for example, the dairy industry. When I was young and you drove on the highways and byways of our country, you saw almost every second farm alongside the road with a long stable. You know, they used to milk by hand those years, Mr. Ntombela. And you saw a herd of dairy cattle. That was seen as the cash flow of any farmer, because at the end of the month he had a milk check. They're gone. They no longer exist. And yet, chairperson, we've got people now in the Department of Rural Development. They're going to spend 100 million rand trying to create a dairy in the Eastern Free State where I come from. And I tell you now that 100 million rand will be money down the drain. Because you can't just wake up one morning and decide this is what we're going to do. You've got to make a study of the industry and try and understand what you are up against before you go on to spend that kind of money. And then you'll have a member of parliament standing up in parliament and praising the fact that the Department of Rural Development is going to build a massive dairy complex and they're going to do this, that and the other. We must get out of this kind of wastage. But the dairy industry, Chair, we have killed it. At the moment, Chair, you can read the Landbouweekblad, the lady sitting there, and you can read the Farmers Weekly, and you'll see the number of auction sales where dairy farmers are getting out like that. Every week there's somebody that's leaving the industry. Now, I'm asking my brothers here, what do we do to arrest the situation which is spiraling out of control? What are the emergency measures that government has to put in place to see that we don't lose more of the production and that we don't lose more jobs? And one last one, Chair.
Oh,
the Department of Rural Development, Chair. Sorry, Chair, this is my last one. The Department of Rural... You see, Chair, I move in this society, so I hear all the problems. There are so many that it will take me a whole day to explain. But this one, Chairperson... The Department of Rural Development is buying up farms as if money is getting out of fashion. And they are paying, I want to say it emphatically, they are paying prices that you will not be able to farm that price out of that agricultural enterprise. That's the kind of price they pay. So what is happening, Chair, is that the commercial farmer whose land they are targeting feels that, listen, man, I won't get a price like this ever again, and I can never farm it out. So he sells. And he takes the money and he invests it. He gets a better return than he would get from farming. But there is one thing that's happening, Chair, in the majority of cases. Those poor, vulnerable farm workers are left jobless, helpless, and homeless. They are the ones that are now swelling all the squatter areas in various towns in the country. And I can show you proof, Chair, where the Department of Rural Development, when a commercial farmer wanted to know what would happen to his workers if they buy the farm, made it quite clear, the Department of Rural Development, that you must find an alternative for your farm workers. We're not going to take them. So rather than creating sheltered employment for our people, Chair, we as government are contributing towards the loss of jobs on farms. And I don't know how we can say that we've created 650,000 new job opportunities in agriculture. Let us have honest figures, and you'll find, Chair, that it's a shocking picture. Thank you, Chair.
Having to stop one of our elders to talk is a very difficult exercise. And I can afford to stop others. Well, one of the issues that Mr. Gaylor, I'm saying to myself, you know, going forward, we must be strategic as we approach our work. We must be strategic. Dinawa just gave me some ideas about a program for the next term. And then I'm saying to myself, we really have to be strategic and be able to say, you know, we, out of this exercise, what next that flows, so that it does not end, it does not become an end in itself. It becomes means to an end. At the end of the day, we have to be able to say, yes, we are making some progress, precisely because we were able to engage on this exercise. At the end of the day, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We have been involved with the department in oversight work that we've been doing for over these past few years. The greater amount of time that the department has been into, by and large, it has been about planning. Pulling together a new department, but it cannot be planning forever. It cannot be putting together a new department forever. At some point, there must be work that we can see, not be told, but we can see. That's what I want us to do at some point. That's what I mean when I say we have to be strategic in our work. Mr. Van Dalen?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, what I hear today is that import duties not alone will solve our problem, because, I mean, there is very little room for change in it, as there are some agreements that are quite rigid. You know, but we need maybe to ramp up control or quality control or something like that on the goods that we are receiving. We're not saying it shouldn't be easy to do business without Africa or impossible, you know. It should be easy to do business, but we must protect our producers. We must look at ways and means of protecting our local producers, and not, like Mr. Abrams had said, you know, create jobs in other countries and not in our own. No, with the chickens we import, if my figures are correct, about between 20 and 25 million chickens a month into South Africa. I mean, can't we cap an amount or, you know, put some restriction on it that they can't dump it in our country? What happens is with other goods that we also import, people will put it in a container, it gets to Europe, and then they say, whoa, 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 this quality is not good enough for us. Then they divert it back to South Africa or to South Africa, because our import criteria is allowing it to come in. So in that way, they're also dumping, not because they have too much, but because the quality. We have stringent tests, and we worry about the safety of the people in Europe and in America, but we import the rubbish into our country as well. Stuff that is injected with brine and the double the weight to get some sea water in it or whatever it is. Who checks if that water is clean? Who checks if that can be consumed by our people? Nobody checks that, but we check everything that goes out. And I think that is quite wrong. You know, and another thing is we overtax our producers because they have to pay for the diesel, they have to pay a road accident fund, they have to pay road levies on their diesel, and nobody helps them. They don't use the road. They use the farm road and the fishers, the boats go out on sea. Why? If somebody dies there, they can't claim it from the road accident fund. I mean, that is all wrong. Why should they be overtaxed on it? We should give them help in the form of taking those taxes off the fuel that they use. If they put it in a vehicle that uses the road, then they should pay for the road tax. I mean, nobody's saying they shouldn't pay if they use the road. But for that they don't use the road, they should not pay all these taxes. I think it's about a quarter of the price of the diesel is for taxes that they don't use for roads and levies and everything. So, and then the quality control on import, like I said that already. No, that's me finished. I think anti-competitive behavior is something we are very strict on in this country. I mean, we have rules that make sure that one person cannot bring the price down of something artificially to have a foredeal for against other people, yeah, benefit for himself and not the other people. I mean, we have strict rules on that, and yet we allow the outside world to have these anti-competitive tendencies towards South Africa, and we are punishing this country for other people's problems. Thank you.
I could see that you're a bit shocked, you know, yourself.
Yeah,
Mr. Tate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just this morning there was a program on radio about farmers that have a huge problem with, now can I see the English word on the roofdieren?
Predator animals.
Predators. They said that about 2 billion rand a year they lose on predators.
Yeah.
1 billion rand a year on stock theft. And that is even before we start talking trade and all kinds of things that's a barrier to our farmers. So, Chair, I really think it's a very good thing that we have this discussion here today because, you know, I basically knew all the things that I was told here because this is what people on the ground tell us.
Mm.
They say to us they try their best, but if you play in an unfair or in an unequal field, in an open market, you lose before you even start. So I really think, you know, there's something that we have to seriously think about, Chairperson, that we must assist our farmers. They cannot continue. South Africa is not really an agricultural country if you look at rainfall and all kinds of other things, because even before we start thinking about this, the environment is difficult. And then we have our own country put them in difficult situations. So I think the discussions here today, we must follow it up and we must try and come up with better solutions. And one of the things that I was thinking of for a next session, Chair, is this green box. I don't know if it's called, it's not that of the green box subsidies or whatever. Because that is one of the things that other countries really use very successfully. And someone sometimes mentioned Malawi is very successful in their green box subsidies, and that maybe we can look at that and what they use and how they use it so that they can legally basically assist farmers across the board in things that will make their lives difficult. So I think if that we can get that as a second discussion, it will assist us. Chairperson, then there was a slide on the policy space section with this thing of bounding and whatever, and it was mentioned that this was in 2004. I just wanted to find out what does it differ a lot from 2004? The slide showed us as this one of bound and applied with the red and the blue. Yes. 2004 is quite a long way off, you know, back. Will it differ if we take it, say, for instance, in 2011 or 2012 on the mountain or not? If we can just get another explanation on that slide, I would be happy, because I didn't really understand. I understood what it was about, but I don't know why we're using 2004, if the results are still the same, or do we have other changes now? And then, Chair, on that slide, who is responsible for this prediction? Is it this ITAC, or is it the department, or who is responsible to make sure that we change that prediction barrier or the amount there? Chairperson, then there was a long discussion about the chicken industry. I'm really concerned about the fact that prediction time now lapsed. My last indication was that we can lose 6,000 jobs in this industry in the next few months if nothing is done. My information also is that this tariff was also only on deboned chicken and whole chicken. But the problem, as far as I could find out, was on the quarter legs. It wasn't the biggest amount that came into South Africa was not whole chicken and deboned. It was actually quarter legs. And we never had a tariff on that. So I wanted to find out from the beginning, why did we not have a tariff on quarter legs? Who asked for us only to do it on whole chicken and deboned chicken? And as Mr. Abram's question was asking, what are we doing now, currently, to assist the poultry industry? Because it's all good and well now. Our round has now stopped. We're starting from scratch again. We don't even know if we are going to be successful. So what are we doing now? Chairperson, and I've received information from the poultry guys that says on this 5 million chickens that we import per week, that could equate to 12,000 jobs if we have our own industry could produce that amount of chickens. So we must think about jobs here. And that's why I'm really upset that the Department of Trade and Industry is not here. And it brings us to the discussion on GDP, Chair. I think we must start working on agriculture, not only the primary contribution to GDP, but all our spin-offs, so that people understand. And we can't just talk about industry. We talk about food security here. I think we must ask the Department of Trade and Industry to go without food for a week. Then maybe they can take this department seriously and say, you know, if you don't have food, you don't have food. So, Chair, I wanted to ask the Department of Trade and Industry, when they go into their trade agreements, whether they take agriculture serious. Don't we always have a negative or a loss when we have a certain trade agreement and we talk about exporting and importing stuff? Where does agriculture fit in? Do they take that as a serious role player? Or are we just somewhere standing by and, you know, have to always be the losing partner in trade discussions? So that is what I wanted to find out from them. What is their own perspective of agriculture? Chair, and then I wanted to add something on this thing of quality assurance. I'm really concerned about who is responsible for quality assurance of food that come into the country. I know that Trade and Industry or Treasury is responsible, Department of Health is responsible, but I want to find out that interlinking between this. Because I want to ask the department, my information is that we are importing milk powder at the moment from made in China, Honorable Abram.
Yes.
And there is a rumor again about something in that milk powder that we must test. Yeah. I want to find out from the department if they are aware of it, if they are busy testing it, because I'm really concerned about all the products that we import, if we are really on the dot with testing and quality and making sure that the products that we import into South Africa is
fit for human
fit
consumption.
For human consumption. And then there was one last one, Chair, this whole thing of rail. I spoke to the wheat industry, and they told me that if we really can put all this wheat on rail, it can have a 50% drop in the, or up to 50%, in the cost of wheat and wheat products in the country, if this thing functions properly. Who is responsible? I've actually asked a written question to the minister a while ago and I haven't received an answer, Chair. On who is responsible to do that negotiation? Because we're back to GDP again. A certain department can't just say we're not going to do it because, you know, it's not a big impact. We're talking about food and food prices. Who is responsible from the department to make sure that our negotiations with other departments is fully understood, and that people must understand GDP is not going to feed people. And outside of the wheat, there's also the export of fruit. People are trying their utmost best to get the fruit back on rails, but their hands are tied with the Department of Transport. So I want to know from the acting DG Chair, who is the main person in the department making sure that with other departments, agriculture is taken seriously? Is it the role of the minister? Is there a forum where the DGs sit and our DG can be strong and stand there with the meat and wheat in his hands and fight for the food and the agriculture? Because it just feels to me that when we have negotiations in other departments that agriculture is not taken seriously. And then maybe it's also the role of this portfolio to make sure that members of parliament take agriculture seriously. And that they, when they have discussions in their portfolios, they actually ask about food and food security and agriculture. Because if they don't do it, their departments won't take it seriously. Maybe we must have if you don't eat for a day, we must fast for a day, Chair, and make sure that people understand to take food seriously. Thank you.
It was to be Baba Msima, followed by Mama Pilus Mishwan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I've been largely covered by honourable members that spoke before me, but I entirely agree with Mr. Abrams where he says the report that we received today did send some shock waves down our spine. It made it very clear that we, especially the government, are busy destroying our agriculture as an industry, as a sector. Chair, there was a time when agriculture was the second biggest employer in this country, after mining industry. And I've been concerned over the years about many of our farmers leaving South Africa for countries as far north as Uganda and Kenya. I've been wondering why, but we got some answers from the report that has been presented today. If there are countries that can subsidize agriculture up to 34%, and we only give 5%, it is a cause for concern. Especially when you consider that the government is focusing on the rural areas and want to develop the rural areas, and the farmer gets only 5% subsidy. How is that farmer going to compete against those that are getting up to 57 in Japan? So how realistic are we about promoting or developing rural areas if all that we can assist with is 5%? I know that there will be some here and there for emerging farmers, there will be free seeds and fertilizers, but all in all, this 5% is very shocking, because it definitely tells me that we simply cannot compete. I'm aware of many municipalities in the rural areas. I come from Ganza, one of the most rural. I'm not even excited that a town is going to be built for us, because that is not an answer. An answer is really developing, and the one thing that needs to be developed is agriculture or farming. So you ask yourself, how is it going to work against a competition of this mammoth size? What normally happens under those municipalities is that potential farmers are given startup capital to engage in poultry industry. Now, if in poultry industry you are going to compete against Brazil, and what are your chances of success? If you are given only 5% subsidy, how then do you access markets? How then do you set up abattoirs and things like that to make you really functional in the industry? So as Mr. Abrams was saying, it can be up to 100 million. It will go down the drain so long as you cannot access the market. And these imports from Brazil in particular, we are told it's because they are cheap. I would like to know, Chair, who benefits from those cheap prices? Because as Mr. Abrams has said, it is not the consumer who goes to a supermarket. These chickens are not distinguished by their lower prices. It is just across the board. If a kilogram is going to be 25 rand, it is across the board. Nowhere does it say if it's a Brazilian chicken, it will be 19 or 18 rand a kilogram. So who benefits? Is it the producer in Brazil, or is it the supermarket in South Africa? But who exactly is benefiting from the cheap prices? And then, Chair, we have been told that the contracts, the agreements that we have signed are not easy to change. So if we want to change the status quo, we have to look elsewhere. Now, I was encouraged when the report said Russia and China did succeed in reversing the situation by promoting the domestic products. Now, isn't that what we should be doing to block the Brazil products? Because if we did that, if we really promoted, if we changed the 5% into something quite reasonable, we really could reverse this situation, because it needs to be reversed before agriculture is totally destroyed as an industry. So we need to reverse this, and if we reverse this, we can, one, create jobs, and two, we can succeed in developing the rural areas. So I just want to know if there is any thinking of some kind, because I don't think we can continue being a dumping ground for Brazilian chickens and still have our poultry farming of our own. Thank you, Chair.
Mama?
Chairperson, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mrokolo. You know, this paper is just in black and white. You read it, you understand everything South Africa is in. And Chairperson, we used to say in South Africa, agriculture, mining and tourism are the backbone of this country. But now you can't talk about agriculture anymore. Maybe we must say mining and tourism, because our agriculture, you know, I don't know how to put it. You look at this this slide, South Africa, a disadvantaged country. Even the position, its position, 5%, still is in an disadvantaged position. And you know, I feel pity for the upcoming farmers. Imagine, you know, to them it's just a total onslaught, because some of them, they don't get this subsidy. They don't. And another problem which I'm seeing, the dumping, South Africa now is just a dumping country from things from other countries. You know, if, you know, I don't think the Brazilian chickens are cheap.
No.
They are not. You know, if in Europe, I visited the UK in 2009, in their supermarkets, they put a product according to countries. You will find that the vegetables, fruits, milk, meat, and South Africa there. This shelf is this country. This shelf is this country. Now, you can compare price there. Well, which are the cheapest? You know, you can compare. I visited several supermarkets. You will find their products packed according to the countries where these things are from. But in our supermarkets, there is no such. You know, chicken is just chicken. Even the local chickens and the Brazilian chickens, they are just one price. It was not supposed to be like that. The Brazilian was supposed to be cheap, very, very, very cheap. If really somebody is not benefiting from this dumping issue. And again, I don't know if maybe South African farmers, those who are poultry farmers, they can just resurrect today or tomorrow or next week, next month, next year, and start producing. And also it is impossible for them to do that, because look at many farms today. They've changed many farms into game farms. That's why maybe many farmers have left producing food and then they ran to game farming, which really, it helps the individual. It doesn't help the whole country
and even other countries outside. Maybe the other disturbing issue is this one of currently the provisional anti-dumping duties have lapsed. And it shows that really the DTI should, they should have been in the future. This thing is not the baby of us Amun agriculture. Even then, rural development also must come together and try to get solutions. And Mr. Mrogolo said, you know, in the beginning that it's like there was a stupid agreement. And I don't know who forced the stupidity to come into the minds of people when they negotiate for their country. They just choose things which will never work for their country. And really, when you listen the way he explains, that is, yes, stupid, you know, agreements. And if that those agreements can be, you know, changed, they can be changed. Just like other countries, they've changed it. Why can't we change it? That's why this Minister Rob Davis is the person. That's why we need that committee to be with us, and they should tell us how long this thing will take before they come up with a decision, a tangible, resolution, a good resolution for South Africa. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Gela, followed by Mr. Pang, and then we give over to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll play the role of being sweepers because we are last. Chairperson, the previous speaker has said a mouthful, and one tends to agree with what he was saying. The presentation by Mr. Morogolo was very good. I tend to agree with you that we need more of this type of presentations. Our farmers operate in a very vicious circle. Very, very vicious. They're competing against farmers who have been subsidized. We cannot run away. It's not easy. It is vicious. It's the worst that you can ever have. Chairperson, you've hit the nail on the head. It's been planning right through. Our term is ending, but we're still planning. Chairperson, most of these things we said in this committee, and one is not going to blame the DGN stuff. Because, of course, there's been a lot of acting in the department. That is true. That affects also the department. Chairperson, the coordination of agriculture is a major problem in this country. You get rural development doing something that's got to do with agriculture on one side. You get money coming from national to provinces, that is CAPS. They're doing their own thing. Local level is their own thing. There is no proper coordination of this thing called agriculture. And the government has invested a lot of money in agriculture, but there's no value for that investment because everybody is doing their own thing in their own corner. Now, Chairperson, we cannot have proper agriculture without proper research. We said that in our committee, proper marketing strategy. Then, I think what the members are saying here, the quality of the imports that we're getting. Now, you have the consumer councils and all that, but where are they in metros? You go down there to those small, the quality of chicken that is being sold to those people. No wonder we have so many people that are sick. The quality. You know, I think we need to call a consumer council here. We need to go to his small township. If you have time, I'll take you to some of the where these chickens are sold in Umtata. You can see this is the worst quality that is dumped on these poor people. Previously, we can say what we like, but we got to refer. Previously, there used to be a thing called health inspectors who inspect the products that are being sold cheaply. I remember in some supermarkets, the whole fridges were emptied and all that stuff was thrown away. You don't see that. You don't see that. That's why we have an unhealthy society, that there is no monitoring. We don't have any monitoring. Then we also have these projects that are uncoordinated. So, Chairperson, I think, for instance, I know, you know very well, you know, then we like the, what you call mleko chicken. You know, when I was in the legislature, they brought this chicken for these caterers, and they said it was this farm chicken. And when I took the chicken, it had long legs. I said, no, man, this is not a farm chicken. It's something that's come from wherever it's coming from. And in our supermarket, anything gets come onto South Africa. Anything, Chairperson. It would be good for us as members of the portfolio committee to visit some of these and see what is dumped on our poor people. That's why we have people dying every day. A lot of this because the type of stuff they are eating. Now, it all boils down to our department, really. No marketing strategy, no coordination, no monitoring, no research. How do you think you can have viable agriculture when you don't have those? They don't exist, Chairperson. It's simply they don't exist. Well, let's make an example of the tractors that were sent to our province, Chairperson. Where are they? Those are questions that we're asking. Where are they? Check on your CAS projects. We visit a lot of them. There's nothing happening. So that is a problem, but I think we need to involve the other departments as well in this here, because you've got a whole lot of departments doing agriculture. It's not properly coordinated. Thank you, but this was a very good presentation. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I want to echo the view that I think critically to what we're doing, we need to help these people from trade and industry. I think they are a major player in this discussion. Without us engaging with them, that's a problem. I always celebrate when I see on TV the president signing something. I didn't know that most of the time we might be getting to serious trouble. You think you are getting into good relations. What it means is that we must look deeper to these things. The second thing, Chair, that I think is more important, the department have done an oversight of what is the problem. But it always go back to say, who is the champion of this challenge that we're faced with? I think myself and Ms. Dane, we met some people who are concerned from the industry. Whether have we done a broader analysis of the impact of this problem to local business? That's very important, because if the department can give us an advice and say this is the extent in which this has damaged local production, for us to be seriously aware of the damage this is causing to local producers and so on and so on. But the political leadership also is very important in this. If there's no champion on this, there's nothing, Mr. Moralov, you can...
Morocco.
he can just say, you know, horrible.
Mr. Morokolo, you can critically make an assessment yourself, and an acting director general, but without a will from political leadership to take these issues forward, there's nothing that is going to happen. The report is very clear. If there was a political will, these issues are supposed to be taken up as quick as possible. And the issue is there, that political will to say we want to make things better, or we like making these relations and continuing as that is normal. Because some of these things that are raising have a long-term effect. You might not see them now, but they're going to take a longer time. And you realize that the lack of action that we're supposed to take as elder have impacted badly. Therefore, Chair, we might have to ask the minister, to what extent is he championing this program of addressing the issues that Mr. Morokolo is saying. That's what is more important to me. Because they sit at the cabinet, some of these things are based on some decisions that the executive is taking, because they are more of diplomatic and strategic level. They are not silo-based like agriculture will deal with them once and for all. The Department of International Relations has something to do with this. Your trade and industry have something. Meaning they are more of a high-level policy issue. Therefore, I'm trying to say we need to ask this minister, this critical question. I don't want to sound as if I'm always after the minister, but the minister is the main person who's supposed to drive things and make things happen. We can't complain, Mr. Morokolo, time and again. You will come next year, you will say the same thing. If there's nobody who's saying, I'm going to take up this aspect and make sure that something is done about it, that's political leadership. Therefore, I'm saying I welcome your report. It's good. But for you to improve, I would say it's 50% good because we have not implemented it. But it's a good report. We must find a way where we take politicians to account on this. Thank you very much for a critical report and the good report. Thank you.
Maybe Marek wish to say Morogoro. Members, I think those are wonderful comments. The aim is to get the department achieving its objective. We also have the best interests of the country as well. Specifically here of the farmers. The environment that they are getting into is a very unfair environment where everybody is supposed to be competing. I think that's the bone of what we are really talking about. When you compete, you must compete as equals. So if you are going to have somebody else who is going to be subsidized, for that person to produce, you not being able to be subsidized, the obvious is going to be the fact that you are going to suffer. I guess the fundamental question that we are raising here is that how best we protect our own players, our own producers. But equally important is what IPAP 2 is raising about agro-processing, so that we don't only end up even exporting raw material. We also need to export processed food, if you like, which then goes back to a point that we'll still have to engage on, that talks to the National Development Plan and also the IGDP, all together, read together with your National Growth Plan. Now, all of these are issues that we'll still have to look into. I want to understand members to be saying what support must we further develop for farmers so that we don't only cry foul? We also need to be able to say, tell us of what is possible, not what is not possible. For instance, if you are to talk about diesel, if you are to talk about electricity, these are your administered costs that any farmer today who is going to be producing will talk about. We're not going to talk about fertilizers. You know, what is very interesting about fertilizers is that we have our own Fosco, state-owned. But the fertilizer continues to remain one of the very critical area that is hampering progress for any typical farmer in our country. That part I just cannot understand from where I'm seated. Well, whether you are going to talk about smart subsidies is another question. So that we are able to get a sense, we understand the situation that we find ourselves in. To an extent, I'm even asking myself a question. What is the role that the department is playing in the WTO? And perhaps that's a question that we might also ask. Because the talk out there says DAF is more of a younger brother or younger sister. The bigger brother or bigger sister here is your DTI. And DAF is literally Nkinkishelwa. What is Nkinkishelwa? Mr. State. No, Nkinkishelwa. In drips and drabs. It's a Nkinkishelwa, you know, and none. Also, I think outside of this session, equally is a very key area of infrastructure that we need to discuss or get a briefing on, members. Infrastructure in general, that will take care of roads and rail, you know, irrigation, you name them. I think we also need to get that sort of briefing. But also important, as we do all of that, it has to be given the context of, you know, the broader strategy that we want to achieve at the end of the day. The last point I want to raise is the point, I think, raised by Mr. Panga. Cost-benefit analysis. What are the costs? What are the benefits? What are the costs for us to be part of these treaties? What are the benefits for us? I think that's quite a very strategic point raised, so that we get a sense of whether we are going or coming. Mr.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, honourable members. As I indicated when I made my introductory remarks, that this is a very complex area that we are discussing here. It relates to our foreign policy issues. It relates to our international trade issues, and the complexity that comes with all of those. You know, you may come into a political or diplomatic relations with a country, you know. That in itself comes with some other unintended consequences down the line. We may be friends with Brazil, for example, which then means that, you know...
Mr. Abraham, can you answer the phone outside, if you don't mind? If you don't mind. Thanks. Can we do that for all our calls outside, members? please. Let's respect each other here.
What I was saying, Chair, is that, you know, you may enter into a relationship with a country which then, you know, ends up having some unintended consequences down the line. You know, what we're talking about here is, you know, this dates back to, I think, early 80s or mid 80s. Some of us that were there, I don't know, some people. You know, if you remember the Reagan Thatcher era, when they were talking about the free market policies, trade liberalization, this is where this whole thing started, because they would say, and it was supported by the IMF and the World Bank, to say that to get any kind of assistance, if you're a third world country, you know, trade liberalization must happen in your country, you know, sign free trade agreements, you know, deregulation. There was even talk of, you know, elimination of subsidies and tariffs and all of those things. In some other African and South American countries, well, this issue of structural adjustment, you know, which then put the third world countries at a disadvantage relating to trade. So this, what we are seeing now, that's the impact of all those decisions that were made at that time. And then you find that most third world countries, you know, did what, you know, what Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher were pushing. And there were decisions that were taken those times, you know, even early 90s, mid 90s, even internally in this country. A good example is our decision to do away with control boards. That comes from those moves that were made by, you know, the Americans and the British and Europe. And if you read what Mr. Morocolo has presented here, you would see that if you look at the EU is protected. Look at Japan, you know, is protected. If you can, you know, look at the U.S., but if you look at the developing countries, you know, we are all exposed. You know, there was a question that whether our political principals are aware of these matters. They are aware of these matters. The issue relating to the poultry industry, you know, the principal players here, there, or the leaders of the South African Poultry Association, yeah, we had a meeting with them, and they raised these issues, and it was not the first time. We were aware of them. And there's been discussions between the minister and Minister Davies around these issues. And fairly recently, when we had our CEO forum meeting, the poultry industry, together with, I think Mr. Morocolo was there, Dr. Nguyen was also there, minister was there, you know, there was a meeting with the deputy president on these matters relating to the poultry industry, and they were discussed. So what I'm saying here is that, and I think I agree with Honorable Member Banga in this incident, some of these things, you know, are above us, you know. There needs to be an intervention at the highest level, country to country kind of interventions, like interventions at the World Trade Organization. Because if you don't solve it there, you know, whatever you can do downstream may not have that necessary impact. But now we cannot ignore the question that Chair and all of us and all members were asking. What is it that you can do in the short term? I think that is what Mr. Morocolo would have to respond to on behalf of the department. What is it, given all this complexity? You know, we can't just fold our arms and say, you know, there's nothing you can do. You know, what is it that you can do in the short term? You know, what are the policy measures that can be done maybe in the medium term? We know that the long-term issue may be, you know,
problematic because you need to undo all sorts of things that were put in place way back, even way back before our time. And relating to coordinating, I think there was a question on coordinating. There are coordinating structures in the executive, it starts at the cabinet level. We participate in the economic sectors and employment cluster. There's going to be a meeting this afternoon, so I will have to be in that meeting. It's led by rural development and all economic departments like EDD, Minerals and Energy, ourselves, DTI, the Presidency. You know, we are in that cluster. It's at cabinet level. It's also at the foresight level. That is at the DG level. And then also there are technical teams that work in support of the DGs where officials meet on technical issues relating to the infrastructure. And I think in your response, Mr. Morocco, just touch on that one. We have what is called the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. We were in Durban, the three of us, yesterday, discussing issues relating to the Durban-Joburg corridor, and you know, from the port in Durban along the N3 past Harry Smith, the issues you mentioned, Mr. Abrams also touched upon. Harry Smith right up to Gauteng, you know. Our interest there is on the issues relating to infrastructure that would attempt to move our freight system from road to, you know, to rail. That is our main interest there. And then you'd find that if you are in that kind of a committee or a steering committee, there would be, you know, conflicting interests maybe between ourselves and Transnet, and you have to resolve it at that level. So in your response, Mr. Mroko, just touch upon that one. And then also touch on the issues relating to quarantine stations in our ports of entry and the role that we play in the World Trade Organization. What is it that DTI does? What is the role? And so on and so on. Thank you. Mr. Mroko and Dr. Ngonge, you may come in as well.
Thanks, DG. Yeah, sorry for being the bearer of not so good news, but anyway. I'm just going to quickly run through the questions. The first one relating to the labs import duty on poultry. It's only the anti-dumping part that lapsed. There's still a duty on poultry. And the lapsing date was with effect from January this year. That provisional additional anti-dumping duty. So it lapsed in July. It was just for a period of 6 months. There's still a duty, but that additional anti-dumping duty that was imposed has lapsed in line with the provisions of the WTO. It's by prescription.
In January this year?
It was imposed in January this year and lapsed in July this year. It was for a period of 6 months. The surplus and shortages of grain, well, the global grain market is always in a flux, and it's always very difficult to give a definitive response in terms of what it is that we need to do. But I think the other challenge that is becoming a pressure point on the grain supply chain is the diversion of grain from the consumption market into the energy industry, the biofuel industry. The U.S., I think, is taking close to 40 to 45% of the total production over the past 3 or 4 years. It's diverted from the animal feed, from the human consumption market into the energy industry. And that in itself, I think, it is creating a bit of, you know, pressure in terms of the grain supply for human consumption. But there will always be this sporadic, you know, ups and downs, the swings in the supply, you know, situation. But I think for South Africa, the concern was that we are sometimes in a surplus position but we also find ourselves having to import maize, and we ask ourselves the question why. You're a surplus producer, but on the other hand, you're importing. So we are trying to correct that with the our consultation with SAFEX. SAFEX is the, you know, the commodities exchange where traders take positions to buy maize for delivery in the future. And sometimes, you know, that market is very complex. We don't understand what is actually taking place. So I think the department, with the participation of the NAMC, we have taken, you know, some interest to really understand the dynamics of the underlying kind of tactic that plays, you know, in that market, so that we know what is exported, when is exported, and what is imported, and when is imported, so that we have that kind of a pipeline view of the transaction on the trading desk, so that we don't really have, you know, these kind of surprises. And unfortunately, given the current situation, there's elements of around panic buying. Once the global market says there's going to be a shortage of grain, countries that have deep pockets immediately position themselves to stockpile. And other countries that are surplus producers, they ban exports. So I think these are the kind of, you know, the interplay between, you know, a number of countries within the grain, you know, within the grain industry. For wheat, Russia is always taking that kind of a position. Thailand on rice, as well as, you know, China and India on rice. Those are the global dynamics that are, in most instances, beyond the control of our own, you know, economy. But you really have to understand how these things, you know, operate and interplay. The challenges that I think Mr. Abraham raised in terms of the current, given the current situation, what will normally happen, or what normally is expected to happen, is that the investor confidence in the sector gets eroded. And once there's that erosion, people will divert their investment decisions from South Africa to elsewhere. Like I think one honorable member indicated, people going all over the African diaspora. And but on the other side of the developments, we have seen the hedge funds, the old mutuals of this world, the Sanlams, that they are buying land like it's getting out of fashion in Africa. And on top of that, China, to make sure that they guarantee the supply of raw materials from Africa into their own economies. And I think while there's a bit of doom and gloom on the sector, other countries have really seen an advantage to utilize this production base that we have. And I think maybe that is one of the strategic issues that we really have to look at in terms of, you know, to what extent, you know, can this development be allowed. And once some economists are even saying that, you know, a return on investment in agriculture today is much higher than in the minerals, you know, the platinum, you know. So agriculture, I think, is the sector to be in, but it needs to be managed and it must be put in some kind of an intensive care environment, so that, you know, all these fragile elements around the sector are dealt with in a much more, you know, long-term view. I think that is my assessment of the situation. In relation to the milk industry, the wool industry, well, I think there's so many things happening there, and I don't have, you know, full details, but I think the key issues around you know, the monopolies that are happening in those industries, you know, driving out the small producers or the small competitors in the market, so that they maintain that kind of, you know, monopolistic position in the industry, and through their buying arrangements, the contracts that they sign with farmers, where farmers cannot even recover the cost of producing a liter of milk because of the dominant position that the big buyers have in. So those are the kind of regulatory issues that maybe must be dealt with by the Competition Commission through our involvement, you know, with them over a period of time. And same applies to other industries, the wool, the, you know, the wheat, and all other commodities. And I think I agree with Chairperson that we need to really have to take a strategic position on some of these things, because, you know, the power of policy sometimes is underestimated. If you look at Thailand used to be a net importer of rice. But they took a policy decision to say we regulate the market and we allow the private players who come into play and we support them to this extent. And overnight, it became a net exporter of rice. So that's why I'm saying, you know, the effect of policy in a given situation, if it's really clearly articulated and implemented, it can generate much more desired outcomes than it can actually, you know, hope for.
to protect our farmers, the means and way to protect our farmers. I think there was a comment around the green box. In terms of the WTO system, the green box is allowed, I think, for as long as the country has got money to support farmers, but only on the investments that do not affect the market price of the food that is being produced. You can support them to whatever extent that you like, on infrastructure, on research, on extension, and all those kind of green investments. There's no limitation. I think South Africa can go to whatever extent. And I think the calculations that have been done over the past 2-3 years is that we've got the policy space of about close to about 9 billion rands that can still be pumped into the agricultural sector, you know, within the context of the, you know, the green box.
And when are we implementing that?
Sorry?
When are we implementing?
See, I think it depends on the availability of financial resources to do that. I can say that even the CASP falls under the green box. This infrastructure support, the land care is part of the green box. So we really can, depending on the availability of financial resources, to expand on what we have already currently started, we can ramp it up. It's in progress under CASP. It's infrastructure investment, there is extension support, there is the different pillars of CASP, I think, are addressed under the green box, you know, measure. But what I'm saying is that we can even go beyond what we are doing now, budget permitting. I think the base rate, I think it was Lissay who raised the question around 2004. These are the commitments that were signed signed in 2004, and they are still in force as I'm talking now. Because the commitments taken in 2004, and nothing has changed ever since. So the status quo that remains. There was a question around why did the industry not ask for protection on the quota lakes or the lake quotas, whatever we call them. This application came from the industry, and the industry wanted protection on deep owned and the old base. That was the request from the industry. But then if there is an issue around this particular product, then the industry must come on board and say, we are suffering material injury as a result of the importation of this particular product, and therefore, ITEC, please launch an investigation so that when a decision is taken, it's taken on the basis of a request from the industry. Normally, that is how these things work. But in the absence of a request, it means there is no material injury that is taking place with respect to that particular product. And what are we doing now? I think this issue has now entered a different array. It's now at the level of the WTO, the dispute settlement mechanism. And we must allow that process to unfold and conclude. Like I said, this matter has been now referred to the Minister of Trade and Industry, and he subsequently referred it back to the Commission. And the Commission is considering this issue, and hopefully, in terms of the timetable that the Commission has set itself to complete on this matter, I think by November, December this year, the matter will be, there will be a final determination in terms of which direction it should be taken. But I think the Commission was really resolute to say, given all the facts on the table, there is anti-dumping is actually taking place. On the basis of the facts, the investigation, and all the other, you know, kind of, you know, tools that they've applied, material injury, causality, and there's quite a number of tests that the Commission utilizes to arrive at that kind of a conclusion. So I'm just not too sure whether once the Commission is going to review the decision on the basis of the issues raised by Brazil, whether it will arrive at a different determination. But I think by November, December this year, we'll be in a better picture to understand what is really the kind of issues. On rail, where we have, I think since 2006, done a comprehensive assessment of the status of agro-logistics in South Africa to understand what is moving from where to where, in what volumes are across all the key corridors, you know, in South Africa. And we have that understanding now. But I think the critical issue is that we have seen a shift from rail to road, and that is what is happening.
But because of the structural change that took place in the industry post 1994, when we deregulated, because now the current structure, the infrastructure that we have, is rail friendly. But in terms of the efficiencies or the efficient services that the grain industry is expecting from transit freight rail, I think it's still suboptimal. So there's still a need of, you know, to ramp up efficiencies and, you know. But the other issue is that given the deregulation and, you know, there's a number of producers all over the space, and the kind of volumes that they generate do not guarantee or do not justify, you know, putting a railway line to connect that producer to a market or the producer to a silo. So there is a need for the consolidation, they call it consolidation, you know, point, where maybe within a given radius, a number of farmers will consolidate their smaller volumes, 50 tons, 100 tons, and everything else, so that it justifies, you know, transport for Israel to provide a service along that route. So these are the kind of discussions that we had yesterday, and it's a matter that we've been engaging with Transnet Freight Rail over the past 4 or 5 years. And the issues that I indicated, that agriculture contribution to GDP, those are the kind of issues that came up because it's a seriously contested terrain where people, you know, the coal line, the platinum always get, you know, preferential treatment. But like the acting DG said, there's now a formalized structure, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Commission, to deal with this issue on a long-term basis. And I hope that, given that kind of a higher platform, we'll be able to come to some kind of agreement in terms of how we deal with these binding constraints within the logistics environment. I think the issues around farmers leaving South Africa, yes, I mean, that is it's an issue about, you know, investment. Sometimes the economy is open. You cannot really restrict investors to look for lucrative markets all over the world. It's happening, but then if it happens at a pace that is really beginning to raise red flags, I think that the economy must start to get worried. So it's one of those things that other countries have got much more farmer support incentives on the table that really have attracted the best farmers to emigrate from South Africa maybe to other parts of the world, Mozambique, Kenya, and all over the diaspora. It's a natural process in any case. The who benefits from the cheap Brazilian imports, I don't know. I have not done that assessment. But I guess the trade of the importers. In between is the way in which this middleman, you know, make a cent or a buck or two through the transactions. Maybe it's one thing that must be investigated. But the net effect is that the imported product come in very cheap and they compete and fail with our local produced poultry. How to change the current agreement, like I said, the Trade and Development Cooperation Agreement has run its course. It's expiring this year, and it's going to be replaced by what we call the Economic Partnership Agreement. Maybe through the renegotiation of the Economic Partnership Agreement, there might be, you know, space opened to make sure that some of these distortions that we've picked up over a period of time are corrected. But I know that the position that is already taken by Europe is a very difficult one. We can only hope that a better deal will be struck at some point in time through this kind of interaction study. And I think it's part of the reason that we have an official from DAF sitting at WTO as well as in Brussels to make sure that, you know, they are closer to the developments, closer to the issues, and always feedback kind of a mechanism so that we don't always rely on the DTI to provide the information. Our own officials are always doing that kind of intelligence and research in terms of the direction taken by Europe on the common agricultural policy, the direction that they take. So it's always very helpful for our officials to be part of, you know, that kind of a system and understanding in terms of the direction that's taken by Europe, the direction taken by China, the direction taken by the U.S. So it's for that reason that we need to have officials, you know, posted in those destinations. Uh, other one.
If you were just to conclude that point by answering a question as to what is their role when it comes to negotiation and all of those, what gets to be the role of the Department of Agriculture? You just to conclude at just that point.
The role of the official from the department is more technical support they call them, you know, modalities in terms of, you know, the position that must be taken by the department on specific aspects. Like, the trading industry does not have that kind of, you know, intrinsic or the tacit knowledge about the sector. When they negotiate from a generic kind of an approach. So you always need people that have, proper and deep knowledge and understanding of the agricultural, issues, on trade issues, the trends and everything else, to support the DTR. I think you are correct to say that DTR is a bit of a big brother in that kind of a setup. But you need people from agriculture, you need people from environment, you need people from maybe minerals, you need people from energy to feed that kind of a system so that when a decision is taken or a position is taken, there is that broader understanding of the dynamics that take place within the sector. So it's more on technical support, in the process. And on the, assessment of look. On the assessment of the impact of all these things on the local business, the cheap imports, I think we have seen it, the poultry industry is already saying that they are laying off, workers because they cannot sustain the momentum. It's happening, they are closing some of their production units, and that is the unintended consequence of some of these things. So, yeah, they are being crowded out of the business environment. And the long-term effects here is that we are not going to compete. So once an industry is eroded, it will take ages for it to make a comeback. It's not going to be very easy. And I think that is the issue that must be noted. I think I responded to the issue around the role of the department in WTO and the cost-benefit analysis of this trade agreement. Initially, like I said, there was an element of enthusiasm when the then negotiators participated in this thing, led by the DTR, that we are going to open markets. The trade agreement is going to give us broader markets and all these things and all this nice language, but at the end of the day, after 10 years, it's the opposite of what was expected. And sometimes, you learn through this kind of experience, going through this experience, and we hope that there will be a space to correct these things over a period of time. I think I tried to answer all the questions. I don't know if there is a question that I did not respond to.
In terms of
the quality certification issues, I think maybe DG is beyond my comprehension, that one.
Dr. Mangoni will just add a point or two.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I would like to just to give a brief response with regards to our support for the point that the Chair raised on our support for agro-processing, the agro-processing industry in general. Maybe just to give a very brief context or background to this. DTI, again, has the main mandate when it comes to manufacturing, and that includes agro-processing. However, what we have seen is that there is no dedicated strategy on agro-processing. We are aware of IPEP, which covers covers agro-processing. However, there is no sort of overall all-encompassing strategy that dedicates itself to agro-processing. But what has happened is between 2009, or from 2009 to 2010, As the honorable members will be aware, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries underwent a process of restructuring. And one of the results of that process was that the structure that looked at the or the forum that look at the structure of the new department decided that there should be a new unit called agro-processing support, which would work much closer with DTI in terms of basically looking at issues of agro-processing in a much more focused way.
Has it been implemented?
And yes, Honorable Member Abram, this has been implemented. This new unit was established in April 2011. I'm actually the head of that unit. That's my substantive job at the moment. One of the mandates that that was given to this unit was that we should come up with an agro-processing strategy in close consultation with GTI. That was done. The strategy was approved by the department early this year. And the condition was that we should do further consultation within the cluster departments, with GTI being the key department. And that process is not complete yet. We are currently incorporating input from the various departments in order so that we can have a final strategy. In terms of the process going forward, the strategy will probably find its way also to the committee if there's a need to do that. But the thrust of the strategy is to address exactly what the Honorable Chair, the point that the Honorable Chair raised, which is the trend that we see, which is over-dependence on exporting of primary products instead of promoting our local processing industry. And that's the thrust of the strategy, but details could be provided as and when this is required by the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, GGG. Members, are you satisfied with your questions being answered?
Chairperson, there's just one or two things. Firstly, I think the Secretariat must just make a note of this. It is going to be very important for us to interact with the role players in this industry, which actually means including organized agriculture. And what I would like to ask, I didn't get the doctor's name, but I'll ask for it now. I would like to ask the doctor also that in the process of consultation with other state departments, that you also consult with the industry. Because those are the people that are going to give you the raw material in order to process. Finally, Chairperson, I asked, and perhaps I was a bit naughty, I asked, what is it that the department recommends? Not the department, perhaps this particular division, Mr. Morocolo, the doctor, what do they suggest needs to be done urgently? You see the problem in South Africa. We love meetings. We love seminars. We love workshops. But then the actual nitty-gritty that must take place does not take place. And as we sit here, there are farmers contemplating getting out of the industry. There are our people who thought that the industry will provide them with a better future, and those people are not seeing that better future. What do we need to do, in your opinion, in order to assist our farmers more? I think the word subsidy in South Africa has become a swear word. I think what we need to look at is some or other form of alternatives. The farmer in South Africa is subjected to about a dozen different forms of taxation, levies, you know, you name it. And with the proliferation of the toll roads, that's also a form of a levy. Dr. Tombela has spoken about the N3 corridor. Now, it's been spoken about for a long time. In Harrismith, which is not too far from where I am, we've heard about, you know, a zone for agricultural development and things like that. I've been hearing it since time immemorial. Chairperson, I'll be 72 next month. And in my years here in Parliament, all I've heard is plans and plans and plans and plans. And if we are not going to do something that's implementable, that's what I'm asking. I think there is a new broom here. There is a fresh air that I see. And I think it is time that if our political principles are asking us, for argument's sake, Chairperson, to bring the moon down, we mustn't merely say, no, fine, we'll comply. We must be prepared to say that if you want me to bring the moon down, yes, it's possible. But then I will require the following. Give me the tools, and I will attempt to do it. Likewise, you need to tell Parliament, you need to tell your political principles, that if we want agriculture to be a sustainable sector in our country, these are the tools that we require. These are the interventions that we require. Being involved in it myself, what I see at the moment is having the adverse effect. 70% of the bananas you are eating here in South Africa today are not grown here anymore. I mean, if you take in the Malalan Komatipoort area, there were land claims against many of the banana producing farms. All that happened is that those farmers just moved across the border. And they tell you, Spears Estates, for example, will tell you, I am not subjected to all the regulatory things that I am subjected to in South Africa. So I go to Mozambique. I go to Zambia. So what we want from you, gentlemen, is tell us what would be a reasonably quick fix to arrest a deteriorating situation. I'm a guy that wants to see action so that we can then work on that. If it requires budgets, then this committee must be prepared to fight for budgets. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the essence of what Mr. Abraham is raising, though I caught it at the end, talks to the resources that we have as a country, that we are not making use of them. We have the land north part of Pondoland that was producing sugar. Today that land is not producing sugar anymore. Ilobo was telling me the other day that easily you could fetch those communities, they could literally fetch something close to 16 million rand per annum for themselves, for their own development. Now these are the kinds of issues, without talking about getting anything from outside or getting anything going out, but more getting anything from outside. We have resources, we have land, by and large. We have the ARC that is supposed to be doing research on that land. What is this land suitable for? Because if we are going to be told about CASP, we all know what is going on with that CASP. It's money that gets, you know, nowhere for all intents and purposes. Now these are the kinds of challenges for us, which for me then, it will really talk to me about the broader issue of, you know, our strategy going forward as a country. What is it that we can produce? What is it that we cannot produce? It's a broader discussion. Santombela, I guess you are concluding, and then we adjourn afterwards.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, honorable members. I think this was a very useful discussion. These are the sorts of discussions we need to have, and the Chair has also indicated areas that are linked to this, that are related to this, that we need to have discussions on. The question that
you are raising, Chair, and which Honourable Member Abram raises. And I've been asking my two friends here, what is it that we'll do, you know, almost, you know, in the short term, you know? What is it that we can do in the medium term? Those are the questions that I also ask, you know, when I meet with them on these matters. And I already got involved in these things when the South African Poultry Association came to us with this big problem. And it appeared that, you know, there's no way out of it. But somewhere, somehow, Mr. Morocco, there should be something that you can do. Maybe just a few comments on those things. Thanks.
Yeah, the DG is putting a guillotine on my neck. And, yeah, well, I think it's, you know, sometimes when this kind of developments happen in a prescribed environment, there are certain things that you can know, you can do, and there are certain things that you cannot do. But I think the poultry industry, there is a huge opportunity, like I think Mr. Abraham, you know, indicated. Whenever you import poultry, you import maize. And what we need to do as a country, you know, I'm just using poultry as an example, to have a long-range view about the development of the poultry industry in South Africa. Like the chairperson is indicating, we've got land, we've got almost everything. But just putting all these things into a concrete plan that would deliver certain, you know, economic, socio-economic outcomes, that is what it's like. Maybe it's because everybody wants to be seen to be doing something in agriculture. You know, I think you've given an example of rural development, there's education, there's, you know, there are so many players in this sector. Maybe the issue around coordination of all these efforts to leverage each other and make sure that we've got this kind of a common vision around some of the things that we do might actually be one of the quick wins. Just that coordination kind of an aspect, because, you know, I'm looking at the maize industry. We're just pumping maize out of this economy. And it's basically exporting jobs, exporting meat, exporting all the associated, you know, allied industries linked to the poultry production. Mm-hmm. And it's this kind of a long-term, a long-range view that we need to have that will generate some immediate, medium-term, and long-term benefits. China has done it on poultry. That's why all these poultry are now coming to us. Russia is doing it. That's why not all these poultry are like stranded somewhere in the deep sea, coming to Africa. So it's about having this kind of, you know, strong and tangible plans in place around all the different industries, and we just become resolute as a country to say we are going to make it. And I think it's doable. There's nothing really extra that I can start to think of, you know, above this roof that South Africa needs to do. It's just to put all these things in line and make sure that we drive the process.
Thanks, DG. Maybe just to add to what Mr. Morocco has highlighted with regards to the issue of coordination. I think Minister has started with the process of getting industry much more involved in some of the, I think, I don't know what to call it, decisions and that are taken at a very high level at the department. Where in the past it would just be meetings between just the top executive of the department in isolation, but I think the integration of industry through organized agriculture and so on, that process has started. And I think through that there will be a progress in terms of coming up with solutions that will, unified solutions that will see the sector moving forward. But I think the answers, as Mr. Morocco has said, are not easy. And then just a very quick response to Honorable Mr. Abrams' question on consultation on the agro-processing strategy. Yes, there has been a parallel process to involve industry, and I think it's an ongoing process which we'll see perhaps in the next few months, a document that's much more, inclusive. Thank you.
Mr. Ndombela, you see at times in dealing with some of these complex issues, you get to find the simple ways of responding to them. one of those for me might have to say, here is land, not part of Pondoland. There were sugar plantations there. For whatever reason, that stopped. Can we resuscitate that? Will you come back to us in the next 3 months and be able to say, yes, those communities are together. Those communities are now working together with whoever was involved or to be involved in those sugar plantations. Yes, there is production going on out of that land. So that at the end of the day, you are going to reduce that sugar that you import from Brazil. End of the day, you are going to get something like 60 million rands that gets to be pumped into those local communities' socio-economic programs. So for me, that's how you might wish to simply look at some of these very complex issues that get to be presented to us from time to time. Is that doable? I'm sure we have many examples that we can pick on. So that we don't just talk and talk and talk, nothing else coming out at the end. So that we are able to say, resultant out of that discussion we had, there is this product that emerged, which then takes us forward. So many numbers of jobs have been created. So many enterprises have been created. So much returns have been created. Is that insurmountable?
Chair, can I add one more? Without yes. A response today, I want to add on one more. Mr. Ntombela has in his department an official called A.T. Van Koller. That gentleman many years ago did a study of land in South Africa that can put under irrigation. He studied the water tables of various parts of the country. You might have seen his report, but it must be tucked away somewhere. Dust that report off. It will require huge capital injection, but you can make the southern part of Africa the breadbasket of sub-Saharan Africa and even beyond if we can implement that plan. It will cost a lot of money, but if you don't start somewhere, you are not going to get anywhere. Thank you, Chair.
On that note, thanks for your time, and once again, the brilliant presentation, Mr. Morogoro. And we're looking forward to future engagements. If you do not mind getting to talk to your colleagues in TTI, yes, we are going to take, the instruction from the committee that no one department cannot come to Parliament. If called upon, regardless whether you are aligned to that committee or not, we're calling that department for a specific reason, and we're not stupid. Thanks for your time, members. Do you still want to quickly take 5 minutes just on the study tour? Just 5 minutes, quickly.
Chair, I'm going to do a statement in the House and check up if everything.
Has it been prepared for you, Mr. Abram?
No, it's not.
Has the statement been prepared for you?
Yeah.
You need to write it yourself.
No, I wrote this, but I just want to see if it's properly typed out.
No problem.
I don't understand there was something.
They only give you that part to say. They take the rest out. I've just spoken to, when I just went outside, I've just spoken to Mr. Foley once again on the same issue. I was responding to Dineo. Already she has collected some of your papers. And then she was also showing me a correspondence from Jaco in Brazil, Maraj.
basically looking for